Ryan, thank you very much. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill Leff. The mystery has been solved. Earlier, we couldn't find feisty columnist Eric Zorn, today's co-host, but he has been found. He's safe. We'll get the ransom money back, I imagine. Hi, Eric. How are you?
Good. I don't know why you had trouble finding me. I was up in my office with my cell phone.
That's
on.
The last place we would look.
I think he must be somewhere.
We looked everywhere but your office.
He must be clubbing somewhere. Or...
That's what we imagined. Sure. Try Rocket, I said.
Down on Lower Wacker, he's probably interviewing the common people.
Right. And Walter Jacobson.
He and I were there.
Yeah. How are you? Everything good?
I'm good.
4th of July was nice?
Yeah, it was really good. It was a nice long weekend without a whole lot planned.
Now, how are you going to, when we have you on Mondays, we get a half an hour version of you, and boy, are you feisty. Start to finish, you come in feisty and you leave feisty. I don't think you can pull that off over 2 hours.
You'd be surprised. My endurance.
You're going to try?
I'm going to try to keep it up.
Give it a shot.
Yeah,
all right, good. I'm looking forward to it.
The entire time.
I thought about you yesterday. We got the news. The FBI came out with the results of their findings about Hillary Clinton and the missing emails, and I know you've thought about it, I know you've written about it. What do you take away from what happened yesterday?
I thought it was a good day for Republicans, actually.
Do you?
Yeah, I do, because if Hillary Clinton had been indicted, the announcement wasn't that she wasn't indicted, but it was from the FBI, and the FBI Director Comey was saying that he is not recommending charges. In the Justice Department that makes those decisions in the end has already indicated that they're going to follow the FBI recommendations. Mm-hmm. So essentially what you've got is a signal that there's almost no chance she's going to be indicted. Had she been indicted, then the Democrats would have been in incredible disarray temporarily, but then they would have had to choose another candidate. And I have thought all along that Joe Biden would be a tougher candidate for Donald Trump than Hillary Clinton.
If it had played out that way, if they were indicting Hillary Clinton, is Joe Biden the natural choice?
I think he would have been. You know, Bernie Sanders supporters would say, well, he came in second in the primary.
Right.
But I don't think Bernie Sanders would have been the right candidate, and I don't think he would have been nominated by the convention. It would have thrown everything into disarray temporarily. But I do think that Joe Biden, he does have some baggage, but he doesn't have nearly the baggage that Hillary Clinton has. I think he would be a very formidable opponent for a guy like Donald Trump. Joe Biden, say what you like about him, he's very likable.
Yeah.
And people don't seem to like Hillary Clinton that much.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the short term news cycle, Hillary Clinton obviously had a good day for herself. But I think long term, the Republicans have to say, well, hey, this is not so bad. We're running against a candidate. I mean, James Comey, he spent about 15 minutes trashing her, talking about her poor judgment and, you know, without using the L word, saying that she was lying about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
That she had said this, but in fact this. And you know, it was a long bill of particulars that he laid out against her, and no intent to commit a crime. You know, we wouldn't prosecute this case, and so the Clinton campaign lets out a long sigh of relief. But you know, the damage was done. That was a very harsh assessment. Blistering was the adjective of the day yesterday.
Is it overly pessimistic of me to say and to think that just by virtue of the fact that somebody is a politician, that lying is part of what they're made of? Is that overly pessimistic? Because I swear to you, I just believe that. I think if that's what you do for a living, if you're a politician for a living, you find ways to conveniently lie.
You're so cynical.
It seems like it, doesn't it? I hate to say that, but my whole life, people always assume if you're a used car salesman, you're shady and you're lying. You're doing anything you can to make a sale. That's the way I look at politicians.
I think the one thing that really is striking to me about politicians is the way they overpromise. And I don't know if this is how this falls. People feel lied to when a politician says, I'm going to come in and I'm going to, you know, cut taxes and
right.
you know, add all these programs and make everything great. And then they can't do that. They can't meet their promises. People feel lied to. They feel deceived. They feel conned.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the politician's job. A politician is a salesman. In a sense, or saleswoman. They're trying to get you to believe in their ability to solve complex problems with simple solutions.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, that is most of us would think of that as a lie. I feel like we've been lied to all the time about politicians. And that's really where Donald Trump, I think, is getting so much of his traction, which is people feel lied to. They feel like, I think a lot of Republican voters over these, and this showed up in the primaries, feel like the party has promised them, especially on social issues, that they would advance the ball for them, and then they didn't, and that they would stick up for working people, and they didn't. and they just feel betrayed by that party. And that's, and Donald Trump came in, and Donald Trump is barely a Republican, right? And in many ways, he's, right. he floats somewhere in the middle of the sort of populist, nativist milieu that he runs in.
Yeah.
But he was really tapping into some deep frustrations that people have with politics, and which is why, you know, he is claiming a lot of Bernie Sanders voters are going to vote for him. I'm not sure that he's wrong about that. I mean, there may be a significant number of people who are just so feel so disaffected by the system. You know, the idea that the system is rigged, that the powerful people are in charge. That those kind of people feel like, I am going to support this guy who says he's going to knock everything down and start again.
It almost doesn't make sense when any candidate is no longer part of the race. It doesn't really make sense how the people who are supporting that particular candidate, the direction they head in. When Hillary Clinton dropped out 8 years ago, I was at another radio station. And we did a call-in segment, and a lot of people were saying they were going over to the Republican side just because the person, Sarah Palin, was running as vice president. They just wanted to see a woman in office, either president or vice president, and one woman is down, so they're going to give their support to another woman, and it was Sarah Palin. And I tried to reason, but what Sarah Palin believes and what Hillary Clinton believes are so polar opposite. Why would you just do it that way? Well, just because that's the way I'm doing it.
I don't think they did, though. I think what happened, when you look at the polls, you look at the results after the election, that a lot of those people who expressed that sentiment
didn't follow through
because at the end of the day, they looked at the candidates and they looked at what Sarah Palin became, and they realized that there was some difference between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, but a huge difference between Barack Obama and John McCain.
Oh, sure.
And that's, I think that's where it's going to come down to for Bernie Sanders supporters. Most of them are, you know, progressive, liberal.
And we'll go to Hillary Clinton.
Ultimately, they'll say, which candidate is going to advance my ideas better with Supreme Court picks, with legislation? Yeah. Hillary Clinton is not a perfect candidate for people who are Bernie Sanders supporters. No question about it.
Right.
I also think it's going to happen on the Republican side. People who supported Jeb Bush, they're going to say, well, I really preferred this experienced, mild-mannered sort of fellow. I got Donald Trump. But if the choice is between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, it's pretty obvious to me who I go for. Which is why, despite all the fuss yesterday, and despite all the, you know, the celebrating and finger-pointing and anger and everything else that went on, I don't know that changes a lot of votes. I can't imagine there are too many people out there who are saying, well, I was going to vote for Hillary Clinton, but now that I know that she was careless with her email, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. I mean, what I think you see more, and I certainly, you know, I had this conversation with Johanna, my wife, this morning on the way in, and she was just saying, ugh, you know.
Yeah.
And which we were listening to coverage of the news conference, and she was just, ugh, you know. And that's the problem for Hillary Clinton. It's not that people are going to, I mean, the choice is very stark.
Yeah.
Between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. But it's the enthusiasm that you lose. It's the feeling of like, oh man, am I going to drag myself out and go vote? Am I going to give money? Am I going to go to rallies? Am I going to generate enthusiasm for this candidate? Because that's how elections are won. They're won on the ground. You know, it's not a poll. It's who gets people out to vote. And that's the problem that Hillary Clinton is, that so many people feel like she's paranoid, she's dishonest, but, you know, she's the candidate we're stuck with. But if it's raining on election day, or I don't know if I'm going to get out.
All the interest in this particular election, and it seems like it's been going on for years. It hasn't, but it seems like it's been going on for years, and we have several months to go still. Do you anticipate a high turnout in November or a low turnout?
There's always a pretty high turnout for a presidential election. This one may really come down to turnout in states like Virginia and Pennsylvania and Ohio, that it may be, are you going to generate the kind of enthusiasm among the voting blocks that's going to make a difference? That's where it's going to come down to. And that's why yesterday, I think, again, was good news for Republicans, which was that it just let some air out of the already saggy balloon of the Hillary Clinton candidacy. I mean, I don't talk to a lot of people. Maybe I don't hang out in the right circles, but I don't talk to a lot of people who are like really enthusiastic about Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. They like a lot of her policies. Mm-hmm. They admire her experience. They admire her toughness over the years.
But it's not the unbridled enthusiasm you got with Obama.
It's not the kind of thing you have with Obama, which is this is a transformative figure. Hillary Clinton is sort of more of the same. And the things aren't so bad right now. I know you'll get an argument about that, but Barack Obama's approval ratings are above 50%, which is very unusual for president at this point in his career.
Yeah.
The economy, the recovery has been sluggish but steady. There have been, 75 months or so of straight of job growth.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been dramatic job growth. It could have been better. But there is this, and of course, the international situation is scary.
Mm-hmm.
Every day brings a new attack, and there's questions about all that. But in general, Hillary Clinton is a continuation of the Obama years, just like George H.W. Bush, Bush the first, was a continuation of the Reagan years.
Yeah.
Do we want that? Does the public want that? Are we happy enough with the way things are going? That's what it comes down to. I mean, when people are going to vote, they're going to think, do I want a big change? And Donald Trump, he represents big change. Now, to me, the big change he represents is terrifying. I mean, I think he's vastly ignorant on things that are really, really important,
mm-hmm.
and rash and completely unpresidential. Just a terrible choice. But people may say, you know what? Screw it. Washington is this awful place, and our politics are paralyzed, and we're not getting anything done, and we're getting, slowly we're losing our jobs to overseas. Let's try something else. People may do that. So, that's what it's going to come down to. And then that's where we get to this enthusiasm question.
We'll continue this in just a little bit. Do you want to jump in? You can. 312-981-7200. That's the call line and the text line. It's Bill Leff. Eric Zorn is sitting in for Wendy Snyder, and it's WGN.
On weekday mornings from 4 to 10, these guys are on at 4 in the morning?
Yeah.
At WGN TV
9.
Morning News.
Yes.
They call it Chicago's must-watch morning news.
You have to
news.
Watch it, yep.
At 4 o'clock, you have to watch it?
You're supposed to, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that like a requirement?
It's a mandate, yeah.
What time do you set your alarm for?
Must
3?
Watch.
3, so you're up and dressed and showered,
right.
And so you don't miss anything?
Well, I get up a little earlier because I have to wake my wife and kids so we can all watch it together.
4 in the morning?
Yeah, 4 a.m.
Wow.
You may. It's must-watch.
You used to do this overnight thing, right?
I was on overnights here. 6 hours. No commercials. It's just me for 6 hours.
You're begging people to call in. Please, gun control abortion.
I had an IV drip with tangy taffy going right into my veins. Just the sugar. That's all I could survive on.
Shift beats that, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's better. It's way, way better.
Scott Stannis did a guest hosting thing, I think, over the weekend.
Yeah.
Our friend Scott. The
cartoonist.
He was on from, I think, midnight till 4 in the morning or something like that. He had somebody shift, and he said, "Hey, you want to come on?" And I said, "No, are you
no
kidding?"
Thanks. Nope.
I love
it. Was fun. I mean, I really had a great time working late at night. It was so much fun. The audience is extremely loyal, as they are in the daytime too, but it's a completely different world. Your whole life, you get up in the morning and you go to bed at night, and then all of a sudden it's completely reversed. And
it's a better shift, though, than the morning shift is supposed to be really, really hard on your...
I would rather be on in the middle of the night than first thing in the morning.
Have you done morning
at a couple places.
Yeah.
In a few places.
And your marriage survived.
Yeah. Sleep stops. You just don't sleep anymore.
Remember Wally Phillips?
Sure.
Didn't he, get married and divorced, three times to the same woman
He married the same woman three
and
times.
And it was all attributed to the vagaries of the schedule.
Right. I know.
Your Honor!
All right, there's a bunch of calls. We're at 312-981-7200. Eric Zorn is with me, and we're talking about what happened yesterday as the FBI decided what they decided about Hillary Clinton was. Nothing horribly wrong. Business as usual. We're not going to indict her. There's some reaction on the phone lines and on text. Let's start out with Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hey, guys, good morning.
What are your thoughts, sir?
Got two questions for you.
Sure.
It seems to me that a couple of years ago, they sent Martha Stewart to jail for lying to the FBI.
Yeah, it's true. They did. And they also sent Rod Blagojevich to jail in part for lying to the FBI. One of the charges he was convicted of was lying to the FBI.
And why are we not even, nobody's even mentioning that. I mean, I don't care for either one of them personally. I don't know who I'm going to vote for yet.
Don't vote for Martha Stewart.
No, that's not a bad...
Exactly.
She keeps a tidy house.
Jim, the difference is Hillary Clinton did not lie to the FBI, according to Jim Comey. She lied to the media. She lied to...
But not directly to the FBI.
But not to the FBI, no. I mean, she misread...
Okay, well, then...
Yeah, so I think that explains it. Because I think he
the
actually...
second question I... So Comey's saying she didn't lie to them particularly.
I think that's what he's saying. Yeah. That's my understanding.
All right. Well, then the second question I have for you, from 81 to 85, I spent 4 years with the State Department as a Marine security guard. at three different embassies overseas. So I know what the classes are that they go through for handling of classified material.
Yeah.
I've sat in the classrooms with people from ambassadors all the way down to personal assistants. I've run through their offices. I've seen the classified material. I've written violation reports at three different embassies.
Can I guess what your question is, Jim? If you know what classified is, why doesn't Hillary Clinton know what classified is?
Well, it's not even so much that. It would seem to me that for the people that I worked with when I was overseas, if you got so many violations in a particular amount of time, they removed you from the embassy, and you lost your security clearance.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, okay, she's running for president. But there's people that are below her, her chief of staff, and other people that were involved with this and were probably handling these documents or emails or whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
If they go to get a security clearance when and if, or God forbid, she becomes president, they shouldn't be able to get a security clearance then because they violated the National Security Act.
Well, my take on this is that all of this flows not from any – I mean, she's not heedless of international or national security. This all flows from her paranoia. The precipitating event here is that she is paranoid about everything that she does, and so that she doesn't think that the normal rules apply to her, that all this other stuff about what is and isn't technically classified, she wasn't trying to – distribute that. And in fact, Comey was clear that there was not any evidence that any foreign countries had hacked in. It was certainly possible, but that she was basically all about her. It was all about mm-hmm. trying to keep her private emails private. It was all about trying not to create exactly the kind of scandal that she's created here, which is something is found in her emails that
right.
implicates her.
Right.
I think that's where he's getting at, is that the intent here, there was no intent to be loose or casual.
We don't think.
No, I mean, no. I don't think she. I mean, otherwise you'd say she's a traitor or she doesn't care about national security. I think she cares,
but she
cares much more about her own privacy, which is, you can't do that as Secretary of State.
Jim, I hate to do this, but we're running late on news, but
not
we appreciate the call. Thank you
yep,
so much.
Bye-bye.
All right, Eric, hold those thoughts. Please hold those thoughts. We'll take a quick break. Ryan has the news, and then a lot more show coming your way. It's Bill Leff along with Eric Zorn from the Tribune filling in for Wendy on WGN. Ryan, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff in for myself, and then Eric Zorn is sitting in for Wendy Snyder, who's on vacation all this week. She will return on Monday. We were talking about the aftermath of Hillary Clinton, the Hillary Clinton decision from the FBI yesterday. There was a bunch of calls and texts we didn't get to, so we'll just quickly finish this off and then on to other things. You said that you thought that yesterday was a very good day for the Republican side, Eric. But not as good if she had been indicted, correct? Would that have been a better day for the Republicans?
No, I don't think it would have been. I said it's almost a win-win for them. She gets attacked by the director of the FBI.
Yeah.
He gives, you know, 13-minute speech, whatever it was, and most of it was laying out all the things she did wrong.
Right.
Her carelessness, how she said one thing and another thing was actually true. And then at the end says, well, we're not going to prosecute her. There was always this thought that she had to win the so-called FBI primary, that if she had been indicted, that obviously the Democrats would have pulled back and nominated someone else for president. You can't have someone under criminal indictment running for president. And I think that had they done that, had yesterday gone differently, and they had just announced that they felt there was cause for indictment,
mm-hmm.
that then the Democrats would have regrouped. They haven't even been to their convention yet. They have time to nominate somebody else. And I think that they could have nominated Joe Biden. I think Biden would be is a well-liked figure. He's got some of baggage, but not nearly the kind of baggage that Hillary Clinton has. And you could say, well, you know, and here's this guy. Everybody likes Uncle Joe, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's a friendly old guy. And to run against, you know, some maniac like Donald Trump, I think you'd have a really good candidate. I think it would have been bad news for Republicans, frankly.
Yeah.
I think right now they've got sort of the best of both worlds. They've got her basically under unofficial indictment, this bill of particulars that was laid out by James Comey. And yet they still have her as the candidate and all the baggage that she brings. And the thing is that you look at the polls, these are the two least popular presidential candidates in history. That they are both disliked by substantial majorities of the population, not trusted, not liked. And so they still have Hillary Clinton to go after and Trump wasted no time yesterday going through and talking about this is a rigged system, this is an outrage, and she should have been indicted. And House Speaker Ryan said he's going to have hearings on Capitol Hill.
That's right.
About why she wasn't indicted. I mean,
right.
Sort of prolonging this issue and these, you know, these basically it'd be a show trial. Nothing's going to come of these hearings except that it keeps the story fresh in the news.
And then Trump takes a shot or two at Comey as well, which is interesting.
Yeah, which is odd because Comey was from the Bush administration.
Yeah.
He is a Republican and he donated to Romney. He is not a Democrat. He's not there's to try to portray this as some sort of conspiracy.
Right.
And he's got a 10-year term that's fixed. He can't be, you know, just thrown overboard when the new president comes in. So there is absolutely no motive for him to
he gets
to
nothing out of any kind of conspiracy.
I think it was an honest call. This is not the kind of thing that we would indict for. And there are a lot of attempts to say, well, what about this case where this, you know, Navy guy put some classified information on his laptop? And,
yeah.
But there's nothing exactly analogous to what Hillary Clinton and her people did. So
let me get a call in or two.
Sure.
Some people have been waiting quite a while. Hey, Nick, thanks for hanging on. We appreciate it. It's me, Bill, and Eric Zorn sitting in for Wendy. What are your thoughts?
Hey, good morning, guys. My thought is this. When I heard this news, I mean, I'm not a huge Clinton supporter. I'll probably hold my nose and vote for her, but never really was a big fan of the Clintons. And I can't believe since the time that the Clintons declared residency in New York so that Hillary could become senator, I mean, she has been on track for gaining this Oval Office for a long, long time. And knowing the kind of scrutiny that has been paid by the Republican Party on the whole Clintons, you know, going back to Whitewater and Monica and all this stuff, you mean to say that Hillary didn't have a group of advisors that was helping her keep whistle clean? Who the heck did she have on staff that allowed her to have a private email server managing all of her Secretary of State email? That, to me, I don't know if that's just blatant arrogance or stupidity, but I'm just shocked that it even got to this point we're at right now.
If you're Hillary Clinton, though, do you even talk this over with her advisors, or do you just, is that just the way you operate? You do all these emails privately.
Well, I think Nick's point, which is an excellent one, which is that someone in her position, especially someone who really has her eye on the future, needs to have someone on staff who is her hold on a sec person.
Yeah.
The person says, like, no, we don't do things that way. You need somebody who is going to be your, who's going to say no to you.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
So many of these people, and I don't think she's alone guilty of this, are surrounded by yes men and yes women who are just kissing up to them, who are saying, oh, that's a good idea, who are trying to justify what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And you need somebody around you who's going to say no. And she didn't have someone like that. And that is, you know, maybe her first error in judgment. When it comes to this email server, as soon as this idea came up, she says, oh, I just want to carry one device, or I want to have my own server so they can't search my emails and find embarrassing things. It's like, no, you can't do that. We just can't do that. It's too risky.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right.
And shame on her.
And that's, you know, that's bad judgment. Number one is not having people. And I don't know that she has people around her now who do that. I don't know that she has learned from that. That's the question I would really like to know from her and from Bill Clinton, is what have you guys learned from this? This business, we haven't even talked about this business last week, where Bill Clinton wanders over. We did, you know, wanders over to the plane of the attorney general and wanders in and says, hey, let's have a talk. Completely inappropriate. And then the Clintons come out and sort of dangle the idea that maybe they're going to reappoint her as attorney general should Hillary get elected. Again, completely inappropriate. Who is around them saying, don't do that? And of course, obviously, Nick, Donald Trump doesn't have anybody who's sitting near his phone saying, don't tweet that, right? I mean, he managed to step all over his message yesterday by saying nice things about Saddam Hussein. So I mean, both these people, and you really need that. You really need that in government. And that
sure.
You need someone who says, like, no, wait a minute, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Don't go start a war in Iraq. Come
on, Nick,
you
brought up some great points. We appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
All right, take care. Let's take a quick break. We'll finish up on this, and then we have plenty of other things to discuss with you. It's Bill Leff, and it's Eric Zorn sitting in for Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff, and then Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune is sitting in for Wendy. There's a whole bunch of texts we didn't get to. Let me just clear one or two out real quick. One of them is this, Eric. It says, in your rush to bash Hillary Clinton, Eric Zorn is leaving out race as a factor. First of all, a quick side note, I don't think you were bashing Hillary Clinton, were you?
No, I don't think
you were. Eric Zorn is leaving out race as a factor for the enthusiasm that Barack Obama had. I voted for Obama twice. I'm not sure if that texter means race being a factor in terms of African-American people voting for him or the general public voting for him.
I think there was significant enthusiasm for the Obama's presidential run because of his race among both black and white people. And there was even after he was elected, there were Republicans who were saying, like, well, you know, this is kind of, even though we didn't vote for him, we didn't want him to win, it's still a good thing that an African-American man
right.
has been elected president. And I think people would say that spoke well of our country and the progress that we've made in this country. Obviously, we still have a lot of progress still to be made, but that we were able to look through race and elect a black man president.
So, I thought that 8 years ago, but I also thought that somehow we have slid back in those 8 years. Don't you?
How so?
I don't know. Just too many things have happened. When Barack Obama was elected president, I thought to myself, even though my whole life I was told that anybody could become president, I felt somebody winking whenever they would say that. That even though this is America, the land of opportunity, where anybody could be president, I always went, yeah, that's true. Anybody could be president.
Any white guy, as long
as you were a rich white guy, yeah. You could certainly be the president. And then that proved it wrong. All of a sudden, a guy that nobody expected would be president, a man named Barack, who's the president of the United States, an African-American guy who's the president of the United States. That said a lot to me at the time, but so many things have happened since then.
I mean, you look at several of the prominent candidates in the Republican field were Hispanic.
Yeah.
Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. I'm trying to think what other rays of sunshine, diversity. Well, and certainly the fact that Hillary Clinton, the first female presidential nominee.
Which doesn't seem to get the press or the play that you would imagine it would get. Is it because we were groundbreaking last time? Is that why something this groundbreaking this time doesn't?
It may not feel as much like broken ground because the idea of women in prominent roles and prominent positions doesn't seem all that unusual anymore. We had a female editor of the Tribune 10 years ago and more.
And there have been
female leaders all around the world.
But this job
yes.
I guess you could argue it, but I don't know how you could. This is the most important job in the world. It's the president of the United States, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it is. No, it's a big deal, and it is a ceiling that needs to be broken through.
Yeah.
And it will happen. If not now, then it will happen, I think, soon. I guess I don't know why there isn't that sense of excitement about that, at least not yet, the sense of a woman being president.
Is it because, guys, we know her very well, and Barack Obama was still pretty new to us? I mean, now having seen him as a senator, as a president, now do we just know him as Barack Obama, the politician, and the gender and skin color and religion, that just doesn't play as much of a factor anymore?
You think, Eric?
I think that's right.
Rahm Emanuel, Jewish mayor, I mean, mm-hmm. that doesn't, we don't really think of him that way because he's just the mayor, right?
I think that's true. I think that's good. I mean, that's a wonderful thing. I remember when I first came to the Tribune, there were stories about like, hey, there are women who are federal judges now. A big story about it. And they're, hey, and you're a woman doctor. How do women become doctors anyway, with their little brains or whatever? And the sense of this just not being surprising anymore. Like you don't see a woman on the bench. You don't see a woman, in the operating theater and go, well, that's odd. There's a woman there.
Right.
And I think the same thing is probably true about an African-American president. That's not the first thing most people think of when they think of Obama.
It's so funny how in 1960 people questioned John F. Kennedy's capabilities as president because he was Catholic.
Right.
And that was jarring the nation. Can we elect a Catholic guy as the president of the United States?
But even 4 years ago, we were worried about a lot of people raising the issue of Mitt Romney's Mormonism.
Right.
I don't think we're beyond those kinds of issues. But slowly we make progress and the political landscape becomes more diverse. I'm not sure we're going backward. I think that maybe we have a new normal that's perfectly thinkable for us.
One night when I was still doing the night show, a very similar topic to this came up. And I said at the time, and I still kind of believe this, that of the barriers to be broken for a person, a man or a woman, to be president, and we've already broken one, an African-American. We may break a second one with a woman. What about the idea of a Jewish president? What about the idea of a gay president? Well, I said at the time, and I still hold this, that the biggest barrier, one that I don't think we'll see anytime soon, would be a president who just flat out said, I'm of no religion at all.
Absolutely.
Don't believe in God.
Absolutely.
I'm an atheist. Yeah. I think that would be the hardest one, I think, for the country to embrace.
Yeah, and my suspicion is that a lot of these presidents with their expressions of affection for the Bible and church are making that up as they go on. That they may not be atheists, but they're basically a-religious. I think most of them just religion is not really a big part of their lives, and they make it part of their lives in order to make themselves politically palatable. But you don't get a sense from most of them that they actually are, you know, devout people who would have been going to church all along.
Right.
I don't know. I covered Senator Ted Cruz out on the campaign trail.
I'm not saying all of them. No, I'm not saying all of them by any means.
You're going to get some that are extremely religious. What was Trump's quote when they asked him about his favorite book? And he said it was the Bible, but he really couldn't go much deeper than just the
Bible.
Title.
Two Corinthians or whatever. He got it wrong.
Right.
Corinthians part deux.
Right. He knew that he made the rich leather for the cars back in the 80s, but that's all he really remembered.
So, but yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That barrier will probably never fall. You probably will never have a Muslim president also.
In our lifetime.
In our lifetime.
But yeah. I didn't think, for years, did you think in our lifetime that there'd be an African-American president? Because I didn't.
Well, I don't know. We had certainly camp people who were running. Shirley Chisholm ran.
Right.
Jesse Jackson ran, senior. There were candidates who were making noise. I thought that it was possible. I would have thought that a woman would have been elected first before African American, but you're right. Someone who says I don't believe in God, no way.
That would be a little hard to overcome, wouldn't it?
So.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Ryan will give you the news, and then we have a lot more show coming your way next. Stick around. It's Bill Leff, and Eric Zorn is sitting in for Wendy on WGN. Ryan, thank you very much. It's Bill Leff along with my friend Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. He's filling in for Wendy Snyder, and we are now joined by Dane Neal, of course, from just Dane. Dane, all you need is the one name. You're like Cher. You're like Madonna.
I was until the emergence of often maligned comic Dane Cook. And then I got like that. But I don't know, because, you know, growing up it was Dane, you know, like Great Dane, which sounds good and complimentary, but then you think it's a dog and
it's
not
kind of
always
a shot.
No,
I wouldn't take that shot at you. Everything Dane says and everything he thinks is sponsored by Resurrection University. Thank you, Resurrection University. We have a couple of things all at one time today. First of all, it's National Fried Chicken Day. Second of all, Taste of Chicago is about to start. Which do we begin with?
Well, we can just begin quickly because with National Fried Chicken Day, only because it is the kind of day that you can customize to your own tastes and satisfactions.
Sure.
We all...
So many traditions, though. You can't just make up your own. It's not a DIY event.
I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, Eric, when it comes to chicken.
Everybody wins with the fried chicken.
You know, is it extra crispy? Is it original recipe? Is there a wrong way to go with it? I don't think so. But it is one of those universal, unfortunately for the chicken, or at least millions of them.
Right.
It's one of those kind of universally beloved foods, and fried chicken is kind of the favorite way to have it.
It enrages me when people say happy holiday instead of happy fried chicken.
Right. That's true.
Well, you won't hear that at I don't know the exact street where it's kicking off, but I'm sure the fried chicken parade, there will be street closures. And all the famous chickens, you know, the iconic chickens through history will be there, like the San Diego chicken.
Ted Gianulis.
Is that his real name?
That's his real name. Okay. Yeah, sorry for knowing that, but I do.
He'll be there. Maybe the Cluck the Chicken.
Yeah, Cluck the Chicken will be there. Oh, good. Well, that'll be fun.
There'll be some Colonel impersonators.
Do you celebrate privately with your family, or do you celebrate big out in the public?
We do two different celebrations. We do one private, just the family one.
Yep.
You know, with some special and slightly secretive chicken recipes, and then, you know, we just get out there with the people because it's fun for everyone just to high five in the name of chicken.
Now, are you one of those families that celebrates on National Fried Chicken Day Eve?
Oh, when do you open your guests?
Because we do that. We celebrate on the Eve.
Last night.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yep.
It's an excellent point, Eric. And because we do have, like, family in different places.
That's the thing, is you spend all day in the car visiting your in-laws or your parents. Right. That's where it gets tough.
And then there's always the bad feelings.
Sure.
Who gets the,
You try to accommodate everybody.
You can't.
You know, because
impossible.
You're all having chicken. And then you get those questions when you show up to the next place. So, are you full of chicken?
Right.
That's why you focus on the sides.
Yep, that's all you can do. It's so true. So, who is doing this up big today? Where can people go to celebrate National Fried Chicken Day?
Your front yard.
That's the place.
It was one of the places. Of course, right. I would say look online, Google, you know, National Fried Chicken Day parades. Mm-hmm. You know, there's probably one. I'm sure there's a huge one here in the city, but then probably in a number of different communities. I think Elmhurst has a really big one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. The White Fence Farm people usually just go crazy with that kind of thing.
And at the...
There's no mail delivery today. So.
No. Parking holiday. Well, you don't have to pay the meters.
Because, Eric, it is one thing. I think it is a cruel and unusual punishment to exclude our mail carriers from this this amazing and important holiday, right?
Because
I'm now being told you do have to feed the meters, but it's with chicken livers instead of
just
quarters.
Just the livers?
Yeah, just the livers.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. Because, you know, when you think fried chicken, you think of all the traditional parts that you fry. You know, you've got your thighs,
mm-hmm.
you've got your breasts,
mm-hmm.
you've got your Thanksgiving jokes. Mm-hmm. Then there's all these other parts. You know, the chicken is more than just those. It doesn't define them. But, you know, they just haven't got the publicity that the others have. I think the gizzard... You know, society or the,
do you enjoy those?
The giblet lobby should really step up a little bit.
Yep, so true. The drumstick seems to be the perfect, to me anyway. I mean, I guess you can make an argument for the other pieces, but the drumstick just seems to fit in your hand so beautifully.
Well, it's as though, you know, the
nature,
you know, higher power
and
nature, right, had designed it
yep.
for the purpose of mobility,
yeah.
which I think makes food fun and good.
Not as tasty as nourishing, I don't think. I think the breast has the better meat.
Well, there's more anyway.
And better.
And is it better also, yeah?
Well, it's a give-take world, Bill. So yeah. you benefit from the mobility, you know, that natural nature's handle,
yes.
right, of the, and then,
yes.
but you give up a little bit on the nutrient side. But I got to tell you, you know, as people love chicken all over the place, over, I don't know if for your kids, if they're more nugget people or chicken finger people, or if they like the chicken on the bone
yeah.
kind of thing. But over the years, I've gotten kind of, used to love it all, still do, but I've kind of gravitated more towards the kind of the chicken finger crowd, you know, with less of the visibly and identifiable anatomical part situation.
Yeah.
You know, and for the kids too, they get kind of weirded out, you know,
yep.
when they can like make their own chicken out of the pieces in the bucket.
When I was a kid, I mean, now your standards for the fast food chickens are KFC and Church's and Brown's, but when I was a kid,
and Popeyes too.
And Popeyes,
yeah.
I don't want to leave Popeyes out. The one that we had by us was Chicken Unlimited. Do you remember Chicken Unlimited at all?
I don't.
Yes.
You remember
Chicken
them?
Unlimited.
All right, so first of all, the name was incorrect because at some point they did run out of chicken.
It was completely
and
limited.
Closed.
Yes.
In addition to the chicken, they had French fries that were so big. They weren't like the fries you would get in a bag today where you get 60 or 70 in a container. These were giant, like, planks, like 2x4 planks of French fries.
Steak fries.
They were bigger than steak fries.
Well, they tried to do a spin-off restaurant just from that called Fries Unmanageable. But again, like Chicken Unlimited, right, didn't take off.
I remember my dad would go and get some, and then he couldn't bring it in the house by himself. Our next-door neighbor had to help my dad bring one in. They were that big.
They're on the.
I miss Chicken Unlimited so much. Well, happy National Fried Chicken Day to everybody.
I'm so glad to be part of this special holiday program.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I think we're going commercial free.
We're going to try to go commercial free, and then we're going to play old clips of other previous National Chicken Days later on.
I'm pretty sure Ryan's going to break in with a press conference
yes.
From the Secretary of Chicken.
Does yes. the President pardon a chicken?
I wonder.
Well, and Bill, as a guy who understands and appreciates comedy, especially when it's built into the advertising side, when you see one of those iconic brands like KFC
mm-hmm.
and what they did to take, before he was just kind of a cartoon character, a drawing. Originally, he was a real, actual human, but the Colonel
Sanders,
himself, right?
Yeah.
Then he became
Harlan
kind
Sanders.
Of a drawing caricature. And then now they've really fully embraced the Colonel of it all and brought in some top, you know, comedy
right.
experts to play
right.
him.
Daryl Hammond for a little bit, Norm MacDonald for a little bit, now Jim Gaffigan. So when we were all kids, if everybody will remember, there was an actual Colonel Sanders. Harlan Sanders was a real guy, and then he died, and they kind of took him out of the advertising for a while, and then they had a dilemma. You know, we want to bring the guy in who started, but he's dead, so what do we do?
What
so
do we
he
do?
Was in he was in cartoon form for quite a while.
That's right.
Because then we were relegated to going, well, he's dead, so it's weird having a dead spokesperson, but he's a cartoon, so that's adorable. So
Jim Gaffigan, okay. Like finger licking.
It's very funny, isn't it?
Well, now if you've seen the latest ones, they've got the extra crispy, and they have, and I'm almost positive the name escapes me, but it is that actor, a little bit older, who's known for one of his greatest achievements is that perfect tan. And
is it George Hamilton?
It's George. I believe it's George Hamilton. And
is he Colonel Sanders now?
I think he's laying on a lawn beach chair on a beach, extolling the virtues of the extra crispy chicken.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure it's him.
Oh.
It's brilliant of them to be using all these different actors.
I know.
To do this so that they're not stuck. So, who was it? The Affleck duck.
Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah, when he they parted ways, and suddenly there's this big issue. Like, are we going to get to do the duck? It was just like a voice. Right.
Right. They got somebody to sound like Gilbert Gottfried.
But you can just plug any new actor in, saying it's part of the bit.
But Daryl Hammond says that they didn't tell him was temporary. The other actors knew you're only going to be in the job for 6 or 7 months, and then we'll get another guy. But Daryl Hammond was furious, saying, nobody told me this. I thought I had something going, and now I'm out of a job.
Well, now that there are 3-4 colonels in,
right, now
we all can enjoy it. We're looking, hey, who's going to be the
next
colonel? But in the beginning, it seemed like, what did Daryl Hammond do wrong? Was there some kind of scandal?
All of these faces show up on my National Chicken Day advent calendar.
Oh, they do?
Yeah. So
that's excellent.
Open a little door.
That's really great. Something to look forward to every day.
And just like any of the actors, even, Lieutenant Uhura or, any of those kind of even peripheral characters in the Star Trek world, those conventions go on and on.
Sure.
Now, for the National Chicken Conventions. These guys, they've got
job
a
job for life.
Paying gig.
They're set for life. Yeah. All right. More with Dane Neal from AccessAppetite.com in just a little bit. It's Bill Leff and it's Eric Zorn on WGN. It's Bill Leff along with Eric Zorn, who is filling in for Wendy, who will be back on Monday. Dane Neal is also here from AccessAppetite.com. Dane is here to give us a preview of this year's Taste of Chicago. What is going to make this the biggest and the best taste of all time, Dane?
Also, Bill, you can enjoy or at least experience some of the stuff that I do at the Dane Neal Show on WGN Plus here and then on a pretty regular basis on the station itself. Excited to do it. Excited, too, because the Taste of Chicago is back. And when there was a time when there wasn't a festival almost every day in almost every neighborhood, now we've got this embarrassment of culinary riches. But Taste of Chicago is the original. It is one of the originals as far as big city food related events like it. And now I don't want to say it keeps growing, right? It grew and then it expanded and then it contracted.
And then it contracted a little bit.
To be more streamlined, more fit.
Right. The first Taste of Chicago was in 1980. Is that right?
That's my memory. My memory is the first Taste of Chicago was right out here on Michigan Avenue in the summer of 1980.
Now, why do I want to say it was on Navy Pier? I'm wrong, but that was
Chicago Fest. Yeah.
The first Taste of Chicago was right outside our window.
Was Taste of Chicago ever on Navy Pier? I'm not sure.
I thought it was, but maybe not.
I think it moved from here to the park.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that huge. It was one day and just out here on Michigan Avenue. And
that was it.
And that was it.
Same system with the tickets, or was it different? Do you remember?
Boy, I don't remember that, but I do remember going and thinking that it was kind of cool, and then going when it was over in the park, and I haven't been for many years now. So,
Dane, what are we going to have this year?
What am I missing this year?
Well, you're going to be missing over the last... Well, you won't, because you're going to go. You're going to be inspired by this
You'll be very inspired to head out there and
revisit some of those memories. But over the last few years, they've been bringing in some of these pop-up restaurants. We remember, as people who've been to Taste of Chicago over the years, over the last 20 or so years, is there's some tried and true, some favorites, things you know and love about the festivals and about Taste of Chicago. You know, your Robinson Ribs, your Connie's Pizza, maybe a big turkey leg, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Rainbow Cone and some of those. And
Eli's Cheesecake.
Eli's Cheesecake will be front and center. And so they'll be there as well. But then they started bringing in, and David Manilow, our good friend over there, Check Please, had started helping to curate some of these pop-up restaurants, you know, and then also bring in some of the trucks as well. And what that does is instead of the... Here's the thing. From the restaurant side, Taste of Chicago was a wonderful thing to participate in.
Yeah.
But it's also very difficult for the restaurant because if you're a smaller place, you've got to take your staff, be on site from, you know, the 6th to the 10th, many, many days.
Yeah.
Long, long hours. You know, and it's tough to be able to do that. So they were trying to think of ways that they could get, you know, help restaurants get some of that exposure, help Taste of Chicago be more of an inclusive kind of Taste of Chicago as opposed to these kind of select vendors we're used to.
Yeah.
So they're doing the pop-up. So they're there for maybe one day. They set up shop, have maybe a few different selections that kind of identify what it is that they do from their restaurant. And you've got a really good, I think, diverse array of things. Everything from kind of the barbecue thing, Pork and Mindy. So our good friend Jeff Morrow has got his new place, Pork and Mindy. So he'll be doing stuff there. They've got Pastoral, so that elevated wine and cheese, like they'll have their stuff over there from their restaurant, Burger Belly with burgers, Demera Ethiopian, which is an Ethiopian, which you don't know. I mean, but I think that really kind of tells the story of Chicago's food scene more than just, you know, rainbow cone
right.
and a turkey leg.
Right.
Arami, which is a really, really cool, it's over on Chicago Avenue, cool sushi restaurant that has really nice takes on a lot of those selections. We'll be doing some octopus and some things. So instead of the normal festival food that you kind of expect, you know, yeah. elephant ears and cotton candy, you're getting kind of a little taste of some of the cool places of Chicago.
And that's not a bad thing. That's good. It opens up your world a little bit for different foods.
I thought you were going to say sinuses.
And your sinuses. It also opens up your sinuses. Is there research as to people who go, do they tend to just go for one day, or are there a pretty good group of people who go for more than one day?
That's an excellent point, Bill. They're trying to make it something where each day is unique.
Yeah.
And they've always had the music acts, you know, and they don't have the same act playing every day.
Right.
So they're hoping you'll show up for one or the other. But yeah, that's part of it, is to have different things, different food selections, so you can, not necessarily that you would say, oh, these guys are going to be there, I've got to show up that day. Maybe there's a little bit of that, but a certain amount of, if I go there, there'll be new and different stuff to try. Because it's tough to get down there and do all that walking, especially in the heat, and enjoy it with the crowd. So they want to give you as many reasons to do it as possible. And on the music side, you know, you've got some great bands. You've got the Roots. You've got Billy Idol is going to be the Isley Brothers, featuring Ronald and Ernie. In case you were thinking it was an Isley Free Isley Brothers.
No, they're in it. They're in it. And Eric is probably too shy to tell you this, but Eric is the one who taught Billy Idol how to sneer years ago.
Well, he has the sneering camp.
Right.
the
fantasy camp.
Well, these are private lessons, though.
Right. Can't comment. The non-disclosure. The other thing, too, and I'm glad that I thought of it, is they've got something else, another reason for people to get in there. On the food media, it has grown so much, you know, since I started doing it. Now there's so many people out there
yeah.
providing great content for it. So they've got the Food for Thought Podcast Pavilion. And so there they've got a place where you can sit down in a tent and have some of these podcasts that are food centric kind of going on live, you know. So you'll have some of the guests from the fest there. You'll have some of your, you know, known notable food personalities participating that either host them mm-hmm. or will be guests on them. It's pretty cool. So, I'll actually be helping out with the Yummy Nation Network one. That's going to be at 1 o'clock. Coming up before that is James Van Osdell.
Oh yeah.
Are you familiar with him? Local, you know, radio guys.
Yeah.
Done some stuff here too, but he's got a very fun podcast called the Car Con Carney, which is, you know, I think it's right. It's an homage to the Jerry Seinfeld one, the comedians in cars. I don't know how much driving he'll do on stage, you know, today at the Taste, but the idea is enjoying barbecue with a barbecue personality in a car. And
oh,
I guess
now
some napkins are provided. And,
oh, good.
And
that's
of course,
fun.
You know,
no place I'd rather eat barbecue than in a car.
Yep.
Like just the right food.
James can pull it off. He's amazing. Several texts, by the way, telling me that I'm wrong. The Taste of Chicago, several texts, all saying that Taste of Chicago was never on Navy Pier.
Maybe it should have been. Chicago Fest was there. Taste of Chicago was not there.
Okay,
right? Is that
right,
it?
Yeah.
And those two were never at the same time, right? They wouldn't do those at the same time.
I think they were rival events at one time,
kind of a
Shark and Jets thing.
Oh.
And then one just, you know, survival of the fittest. Just survived and went on.
There's also a lot of people saying that it is, in fact, George Hamilton who's in those Kentucky
nice.
Fried Chicken.
But good for him, right?
I mean,
didn't he do a vampire movie once?
Yeah.
Okay. But other than that, he's just known for being tan.
Now, Dane, is this podcast thing happening every day at the fest or just?
It's going to be happening for the next 3 days there, at least the next 3 days. Today, it starts at 1 and goes for a few hours. And for those people that are fans of kind of the food related podcasts we've had, you know, like Chewing the Fat, award winning, they do a great job. They'll be there. Either tomorrow or the next day. Rick Bayless and Steve Dolinsky will be doing the Feed podcast from there. So it should be pretty fun.
And interestingly enough, this coincides with the Podcast Movement Convention. There are 1,500 people in town for the Podcast Movement. It's the third annual.
It's a movement?
It's the name of the conference is Podcast Movement. And it's got all these stars of the podcasting world have shown up in town, including Dan Pashman, who does the Sporkful. I don't know if he's part of this podcast lineup. But
they would be lucky to have him. But yeah, it is really, it's gotten to be one of those things where when you can have things on demand, it's just like our DVRs at home. people just love it. And when you can have specific content that you're excited about,
sure,
then people enjoy. Podcasts are big.
And will we get those figures every year? This is a big news story. When Taste of Chicago is over, they tell us how many pounds of garbage we were able to produce.
Oh, I thought you were going to say how many slices of pizza.
Well, they tell us that. They always build up. How many slices of pizza? How many giant turkey legs? But then they always end with how many pounds of garbage. And that fits under that category of news that I have no idea what to do with. Like, once I know that, I just nod and go,
how many tons of sewage was produced?
Right.
How many porta potties would it be?
Yeah. Please tell us more. I want to know more. Dane, thank you. This should be great. Have a happy and a safe National Fried Chicken Day. Promise me.
Stay crispy.
Stay crispy, my friend.
Don't overdo it. Don't overdo
it. That's all you can ask. Thank you, Dane. That's Dane Neal from AccessAppetite.com. We'll take a quick break and then some news. It's Bill F. along with Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune on WGN.
I'm Mr. Green Christmas. I'm Mr. Sun.
Eric, you can sing along if you want.
No? The words
do you not know the words to this? It's me, Bill Laff. It's him, Eric Zorn. Eric is filling in for Wendy, who will be back on Monday. Now, normally, you hear that song, you think, oh, it's Christmas time. This is great.
It's not beginning to feel a lot like Christmas.
Not yet. No. Because it's just, it's
just,
July.
It's just till National Fried Chicken Day.
However, so. I know, one holiday at a time. They're piling up like planes over O'Hare. The Christmas Expo, the big Christmas Expo, is running July 14th through the 16th at the Midwest Conference Center. That's in Northlake. Here to talk about it is Rick Goldschmidt. Now, we've had Rick on a bunch of times in the past. You know Rick as the official historian and anarchist.
He destroys things.
He's a very dangerous man, is Rick Goldschmidt, official historian for the Rankin Bass production team. Hi, Rick. How are you?
Hey, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, sir. May I be the first to wish you a very Merry Christmas. Rick, I had a hard time saying archivist, but not historian. Explain what exactly that means for the Rankin Bass Company. What exactly do you do for them?
Well, I've written four books about Arthur Rankin and Jules Bass, and I also consult on things, and some of my archives are in museums, like there's one in Germany right now that's displaying my Pinocchio collection. So it's kind of all-encompassing Rankin Bass.
And for people who don't know who Rankin Bass are, those were the producers of the most beloved Christmas specials, some of the most beloved Christmas specials. You had Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you had Frosty the Snowman, the Little Drummer Boy, Year Without a Santa Claus. Was that them?
Why are you asking me this?
Rick would know. I guess he would know better than anybody, Rick. But probably close to a dozen specials, right?
And these are the stop action things.
Even more so. And then they went on to do The Hobbit and Thundercats and Mad Monster Party, all kinds of different things in entertainment.
Great stuff. All good stuff. We usually talk to you about this at Christmas, but like I said, the Christmas Expo is coming to Northlake July 14th through 16th. ChristmasExpo.com for all of your questions. What exactly will people find there at the Christmas Expo?
Well, there's a vendor room where they can get into it for $8 a day. And I'll be there with all of my Rankin Bass stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They also have classes on home decorating over a 3-day period. And for those fees, it's a little bit more. I think it's $185 for the 3 days. And the reality show, Great Christmas Light Fight on ABC, is also there. And some of the people that have been at the expo have been on the show. So it's kind of interesting.
Have you ever seen the show, Eric? These are people who are just the most diehard decorators you've ever seen, who decorate their home with thousands and thousands and thousands of
lights. For them, this convention probably comes a little bit too late in the year. Right?
Probably.
Like, oh, you know, I'm not going to get all the techniques that I need.
Right.
I'm looking at the lineup here. They've got classes on soldering, video recording and projection, repairing light strings, adding special effects. This is all for people. These are for really hardcore Christmas display people.
Yep.
I suppose even Halloween people could learn from this,
too. And Rick, this is done in July. For what reason exactly? Why do they choose this time of year to do the big Christmas Expo?
Well, it's Christmas in July at they actually travel around the country, and I don't know if this is the first time it's been in Illinois, but I'm pretty excited about being a part of it. And I'm also going to speak at the kickoff on next Thursday in the morning. I think it's at 8 o'clock in the morning. So it's pretty extensive, and I'm a huge Christmas fan myself, being involved with Rankin Bass.
We've got a slightly bad connection, Rick. Where are you? You're not in Chicago, are you?
Yeah, I'm in Chicago.
Oh, you are. All right. Stay wherever you are right now. Don't move in any direction. Stay right where you are, because that sounds the best. Right where you are right now. Tell us about the books. You always have new books coming out about this sort of thing. What do you have out now?
Well, it's almost the 20th anniversary of my Enchanted World of Rankin Bass book, so we're working on an update to that. And my most recent book was the Arthur Rankin Scrapbook, which we added another 24 pages to in the hardcover edition. And that covers like his early part of his career, where he started out at ABC television as an art director and worked on shows like Tales of Tomorrow and some of the early dramas of television. And then he transitioned into animation with the New Adventures of Pinocchio. But when Rudolph hit, that really opened up a lot of doors for Arthur Rankin and Jules Bass, and they produced so many television and films. They did a lot of feature films. Their first feature film was King Kong Escapes, you might remember from.
And that was stop action animation as well, huh?
No, that actually had someone in a costume as King Kong, and it was done in Japan, and it was quite a
and it swept the Academy Awards that year, I remember.
No,
it didn't. I have a happier memory of it then, for some weird reason. I don't know why. And a bunch of movies with Danny Kaye, right? Wasn't The Daydreamer a live-action movie they put together?
Oh, yeah. This is the 50th anniversary of The Daydreamer, and that starred Burl Ives and Boris Karloff and Margaret Hamilton and Ray Bolger from The Wizard.
Wow. Impressive.
I mean, big star-studded cast for that, but it didn't do that well at box office.
Rick Goldschmidt, again, is the official historian for Rankin Bass Productions, and you can see him at the Christmas Expo, which will be running July 14th through the 16th at the Midwest Conference Center. That's in Northlake. What you want to do is go to ChristmasExpo.com for all the information about that. And then, Rick, what's your website if people want to find out more about you and your books?
It's MiserBros, MiserBros.com, just like the Eat Miser and Snow Miser. And we have a Christmas in July sale going on right now where we have 20% off of the T-shirt. We're offering some free prints of Rudolph and Tokyo Bear.
Excellent. That's miserbros.com. Rick, thanks very much. Have a happy holiday season.
Thank you.
All right, take care. That's Rick Goldschmidt. We'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill F. and Eric Zorn on WGN. Eric Zorn is here of the Chicago Tribune. He usually visits us here on the show on Mondays, but Wendy's off this week, so Eric is kind enough to fill in for a couple of hours. You know what hit me as it was ending, Eric, on the 4th of July, so that would be Monday, obviously. I heard somebody make reference to the fact that our country is now 240 years old, which means this was the 40th anniversary of the bicentennial. Does that seem like it was 40 years ago? Bicentennial mania.
I was told there would be no math. You're saying 240 minus 40 is
200. Show your work on this.
Bicentennial. Okay,
I need to
yes.
see your work on this.
Yeah, in fact, I have met strong memories of the bicentennial. It was my senior year in high school, and I'm going back to my 40th high school reunion.
Oh, wow.
Next weekend. So there's,
wow.
So that.
Will there be a bicentennial theme at the reunion?
I doubt it, but there was certainly a bicentennial theme at our homecoming, and it was a big deal. It was the class of 76, and it was, I remember we were on a parade float that we had for the homecoming parade, and we had bunting, red, white, and blue bunting.
Yeah.
We were playing patriotic songs on our instruments, and so it was a lot of fun.
I was explaining to my daughter that patriotism that you get on the 4th of July, and sometimes it bleeds into the weekend, was kind of year round in 1976. I remember for most of the year on any given day, you could walk around and see somebody wearing an outfit that was red, white, and blue, and nobody would scoff at that. People would just go, it's the bicentennial. If you're ever going to wear red, white, and blue, this would be the year. So it was kind of commonplace. I know I had a lot of clothes that were red, white, and blue. My friends had a lot of clothes that were red, white, and blue, and everybody just kind of accepted it.
I wonder how much of that is colored by, you were in high school also, right?
Yeah, I'm a year behind you.
So there's a sense of that we were living in a more innocent time of our lives then.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it did feel like there was the country had come, was coming together under that, but mm-hmm. it was also a presidential election year,
mm-hmm.
remember? And so I'm guessing that people who were older at the time, who were actually living the politics of the, I mean, I wasn't that involved in all that news. I was more involved in if I was going to get a date to the dance and you know, the kind of things that high school kids are involved with. And so, you know, my world was a lot smaller, but I do remember this very strong sense of patriotism at the time, a sense of
and year round, right? Not
oh, yes,
just
absolutely
not just for the 4th of July.
Yeah, I mean, the homecoming parade was in the fall of 75, but the theme of our whole year was the bicentennial.
Yeah,
because of that, but I don't know how particular that memory is to that to the age that we were then, that you know whether they were that whether the adults were just as disputatious and horrible to each other as they are today,
right.
about politics and
right.
country and so on, whether there's all the recriminations, you're not a real American and all that kind of stuff. So
I remember one of our neighbors had a garage door that they painted with stars and stripes, and they did that very early in the year, February or March, and it was like that throughout the year. I turned 13, and my present for turning 13 was a Schwinn Varsity bike that was their bicentennial edition that was all red, white, and blue. And at the time I thought, this is the coolest bike in the world. I'll get supermodels left and right now that I have this bike, the bicentennial edition of the Schwinn. But it was very, very commonplace. I was telling my daughters, you just saw people wearing very patriotic red, white, and blue clothes. And like now you would see somebody, and if it wasn't the 4th of July, you'd go, oh, great. What are you, an American flag? What are you doing?
Well, it was an interesting time because if you remember back during the Vietnam War, the American flag became a very polarizing symbol, and some, you know, anti-war protesters were like wearing it on their rear ends of their jeans. And
sure.
So, and there was a sense that the flag represented a certain kind of oppressive conformity and support for the war.
Yeah.
And the flag became a somewhat polarizing symbol, I believe, back in like 68 through 72. And I do have memories. I was in junior high at that point. And just the sense that the flag did not represent me, but it represented, you know, Nixon's silent majority and so
yeah.
on. I have a different memory, different feel from 76. I feel like the country, because we were no longer in the war, that and we had gotten rid of Richard Nixon, and there's more of a sense that patriotism had become somewhat cooler again.
Right.
That it wasn't weird to feel like you were, you know, part of this wonderful experiment of the United States of America. And I think that has persisted to some degree ever since, and that there hasn't been a sense since then that patriotism is you know, corny or you know, somehow represents one political philosophy or another. I another memory I have having to do with all that, it has to do with the post 9/11 world. And we were in our neighborhood last week on the 4th of July. There were only a couple of flags out, and I remember after 9/11 in 2001, just about every house on the block had flags in
yeah,
the house for
you're right.
several weeks.
You're right.
And a sense that you know, and that sense of patriotism, and as horrible as that event was, it did have that sense of bringing us all together and reminding us of all that we have in common. And maybe that's a corny thought, but you know, in all the fighting we do, all the bickering, all the nasty stuff we say about each other on social media, just you and me, there is so much that we share, and there's so much that's great about this country. So I think that thought was really prevalent in 76 and is not as prevalent today.
Isn't it sad, though, that it sometimes takes such a negative event like September 11th to bring the country together? It shouldn't take something that negative to make us all realize that we're all on the same team. And I don't remember exactly how long that lasted, but I do remember back after September 11th, it did seem like everybody in the country was together at least for a little while. And it seems like now, I don't remember a time in my life anyway, that the country's been more divided by so many things, mostly politically.
It feels like it. And of course, you know, political divisions are not bad things. And it is important for us to have these different viewpoints and to work out our differences and so on. I mean, I'm not one who says that we should all get along and all the time and it should all be
right.
all be peaceful and wonderful. I mean, disputes are very important and how we work those out. But there is also, I think, we do lose sight too easily of that bedrock that we all share.
Yeah.
In the sense that the common values, the common goals that most of us have. Yeah, I mean, we have vastly different routes to getting to those goals and different visions of some of the particulars of them, but that there is a lot that we share. And that's something that I think came out at the bicentennial, came out after 9/11,
yeah.
and comes out, you know, too seldom otherwise,
yep.
to remind us of how much we do have in common.
Right. But does it back to the original scope yeah. of this, does it seem like that was 40 years ago?
Oh, absolutely not.
Does it?
But, you know, nothing. I mean, we were talking earlier about the first Taste of Chicago
in 1980.
It feels yeah. like yesterday sometimes.
Yeah,
so
I know.
Time just goes by.
It really does. Eric, thank you for being here. Really appreciate this.
Really fun.
It's always fun to talk to you. Read Eric Zorn in the Chicago Tribune, or you can listen in to his Mincing Rascals podcast. How can people get that?
Well,
WGN
John
Plus?
Williams is the host. John Williams of WGN, and we record it on Fridays. It's on WGN Plus. It's on iTunes, Stitcher,
yeah.
Google Play, all those places. So
you guys do a great job.
Thanks.
It's always
it's
fun
a
to
lot
listen
of fun.
To. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. Stay where you are. It's Bill F. and Eric Zorn in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. Kim, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill Leff, and we have spun the wheel of co-hosts, and the name Mark Harmon came up. My friend Mark Harmon from the sports department here at WGN. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Bill. I rigged it. I put my name underneath every slit, and when you spun it, they actually all fell off, so it could only land on me.
I saw some of the little overlays going in all different directions, and I'm like, who's responsible? Now I know it's you.
Well, I had to be aggressive to get in here.
Sure.
You know, I know you so well for so long, but we've yes. never done a show together, and,
nope.
and this is the moment for me to live my dream. I don't know how you feel about it, but
I'm not as happy as you are. You're yeah. way happier about it than I am.
Yeah, you know, I'm super excited, and so I don't know. I'm only here till 3, but I'm hoping we could continue the show on the
sidewalk,
around the city, really.
Yep, walk around and just talk about stuff.
You know, White Sox are playing tonight, as Kim just said. We could go out, stand there.
Let's go there.
Yankees fans, White Sox fans.
Right.
And just roll the streets, really. Maybe take the architecture tour. Right,
you want to do that?
Sure.
I'll do that with you.
Haven't you ever wanted to do that?
Just the Chicago guys.
See?
Yeah.
Right, Kim?
If you go there, you come with us, Kim. We'll have a good time.
Have you ever secretly wanted to be like the tour guide on the boat and just tell stories and just share everything about the city? You know, this building means a lot to the city, but it means something special to me.
Always wanted to do it and give out fake information. I just wanted to see how long a crowd would sit for that if you just said stuff that just wasn't true. Many of you will remember King Kong climbing this building in the classic film King Kong. What? He didn't do that.
Yeah, no, that didn't happen. You could get away with that. I believe everything you say, and you never tell me anything that's true.
Oh, thank you. That's very, very kind of you. There's a lot to talk about, not just from the world of sports, but I wanted to start out with this because this is a very exciting time for Cubs fans, as we have not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, but 7 members of the Northsiders going to the All-Star Game. I don't think we had 7 members all last decade go to the All-Star Game.
I don't know if they've ever had 7 members in the history of the ball club,
no,
really. I thought you were going to say how they've lost 5 of 6 and got swept by the New York
That's
Mets.
That's bad.
Yeah, you're going with the positive.
Yes.
Yeah, 7 All-Stars.
How about that?
It's pretty crazy, right?
The
entire infield at the All-Star Game is Chicago Cubs. That's kind of crazy.
Now, I've looked online, and there's fans of other teams around the league and around baseball who say that somehow we're getting treated favorably, that several of those members don't belong as starters in the All-Star game, and there may be some validity to that.
There's most definitely validity to that.
Yeah.
But that's what happens when you start out the season the best team in baseball, and you're
mm-hmm.
the most popular team in baseball. Maybe the most popular team in all of sports. Like, there is no greater story out there than the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series, right?
Wouldn't that be something?
Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah,
How many,
I would like to right. see that.
So, Chris Bryant, are we starting with sports because of me? That's so adorable of you.
I'm easing you in.
Okay.
And then the rest will be literature.
I appreciate that.
Well, politics, 18th century politics.
Oh, good.
After
good.
This.
I'll bring in somebody from the station.
All right.
So, yeah, Bryant and Rizzo, you know.
Well-deserved.
Well-deserved.
Anthony Rizzo was the top vote getter in all of baseball. How about that?
Are you into hashtag Brizzo?
I'm not, but if it'll make life easier, I could take a peek, sure.
Well, that's a thing.
The number one vote getter in all of baseball, Anthony Rizzo.
Kind of crazy, right? I mean, it's you're the most popular guy going. That's a move for Anthony Rizzo. I think he was flattered, judging by his tweets. Then he put out something a little scary, though.
What did he say?
Let's go get this home field advantage, which if you believe in jinxes, and many Cubs fans do, right? Now you're talking about getting home field advantage so the Cubs can have home field in the World Series.
Do you need to explain? I don't know if people know what that means. I hope they do. But they've made the All-Star game now sort of mean something. For years and years, it didn't. And then they had a year. It ended in a tie, didn't it, about 6 or 7 years ago?
2002, which is, you know,
2002?
Roughly 6, 7 years ago. Same, I mean, by my math. It was
it that long ago? I swear, to me, it doesn't seem that long ago.
7-7 in Milwaukee, and Bud Selig didn't like that they ran out of players. So we had to make it, quote-unquote, mean something.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, ridiculous. And home field, and the who gets to have more games at home in the World Series?
Right.
It used to be alternating every year, which I always thought was ridiculous, too. Whoever has the best record.
It should be the team with the best record.
Right.
I agree with you.
I mean, why is this is not hard, but they alternated it, and now they made it whoever wins the All-Star game, that league, Cubs in the National League, mm-hmm. would get home field in the World Series.
And people are down on Rizzo because they say, let's leave that unsaid. You don't need to say that out loud.
I haven't heard that, but my own worry, Cub fan, 1984, 89, 2003, I didn't mention 98 because they weren't even in contention, or 07 or 08, now
right.
I did. You know, you can't say those things.
Right.
Oh, come on. You gotta rock some swagger.
Burrow out of
come
nowhere.
Come on.
Well, but to Ryan's point, there was a time if a guy was pitching a no-hitter from the third inning on, none of the announcers would say anything. None of the players would say anything. And everyone's gone very lax on that. I see now, I'll see a guy with a no-hitter in the sixth or seventh or eighth inning, and guys will go up and talk about it, and announcers will say, if you're just joining us, Arrieta's got a no-hitter in the seventh inning.
Well, intellectually, I believe that there are no jinxes, and what Len Casper says on TV doesn't mm-hmm. matter. However, mm-hmm. Bill, if I may.
Mm-hmm. You may.
If I'm an opposing player
yes.
hearing Anthony Rizzo say something like, let's go get that home field.
It razzes you a little.
It might razz you just
yeah,
a drop.
Just a little bit.
Just a little drop of a razz. And I don't, you know, right. he gets hit all the time anyway because he crowds the plate, but maybe he gets, maybe they beat him another
Somebody'd
time.
Somebody brush him back
Do you
for
think
this?
It would be someone from the American League that would have to do that?
Yes.
Well, that's coming up. I mean, they're going to play the White Sox pretty soon here. And that's yeah. another thing, by the way, with the All-Star game. It could be Chris Sale of the White Sox, their lone representative, versus Jake Arrieta. So you'd have the Cubs infield, Chris Sale, and Jake Arrieta. And just,
how about that?
Just the mecca of baseball, Chicago, Illinois.
Yeah, because the dude from the Dodgers got hurt.
Yeah, Clayton Kershaw.
Clayton Kershaw.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Now, am I imagining this, or usually if you're the host city for the All-Star game, there tends to be a little more interest, so maybe you get a couple of extra players in. But we are not the host city for this year's All-Star game. This has nothing to do with anything but popularity and merit.
Yeah, right. Mostly popularity and some merit.
Some merit.
But yeah, that's unfair. Popularity and merit is correct, just how you put it. It's in San yeah. Diego, so yeah, no. And Chris Bryant went to college in San Diego, so there is that, and he's going to have lots of his, you know, college buddies and family and friends.
Yeah.
So that's cool for Chris. But yeah, no, this has got nothing to do with the All-Star game being at Wrigley Field or U.S. Cellular Field. It's not in Chicago.
Did Ben Zobrist get the nod at second base by only 80 votes?
Mm-hmm.
Did I read that correctly?
He did, the closest.
He won by 80 votes. That's it. And how many superdelegates did he have?
He had 38% of the delegates.
That's good news.
Yeah, Daniel Murphy, who Cub fans remember last year from the New York Mets, and he had a home
where run. Where he didn't get any outs in the right. whole series. I don't think he made a single out.
Yeah, he had a home run in every single game. Daniel Murphy's playing second base now for the Washington Nationals. Daniel Murphy is hitting .349, which, Bill, I'm not a math...
That's all right.
Yeah, that's not bad. I'm not a math major, but that is better than what Ben Zobrist is hitting, which
yeah.
I'm looking for that right now. Which
I think
he's
just over 300, I
right.
think.
Well, bottom line, he ain't hitting .349. So,
no.
And that's a very prodigious number.
Yeah.
So
he may have been more deserving at second base.
Perhaps, yes.
Yeah.
Just a trifle.
When I was a kid, and I'm a couple years older than you, the Dodgers had an infield that I don't know that they started every All-Star game, because even though Ron Say was a great third baseman, Mike Schmidt was a lot better at third base.
Mm-hmm.
But Bill Russell was an amazing shortstop. Davey Lopes was a fantastic second baseman. And Steve Garvey was always the All-Star first baseman. So the Dodgers always had for 6, 7, or 8 years, they had an infield that could have been the All-Star infield. I never thought I'd see the day where all four infield positions went to the Cubs in the All-Star game.
Right. It's crazy. And Zobrist is hitting .291, by the way, which is...
Oh, is he? Yeah, he's trepped a little.
That's 49 plus 9. That's 58 points away from .349. You love stats, don't you, Bill?
Enjoy the stats.
Yeah, but the other thing about, you know, you're talking about the Dodgers infield. Those guys played the infield.
Yeah.
Ben Zobrist has played a bunch of games in the outfield. And so has Chris Bryant.
Chris Bryant has played in the outfield, too. Yeah, right. So... They're a little lax with the positions.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the genius of Joe Maddon.
Right. He moves guys around.
Did you see his
it's like a Rubik's Cube. His team is like a Rubik's Cube.
Were you good at the Rubik's Cube?
Yeah.
You were?
I can solve a side. Were. Pick a side. I can solve the side for you.
Okay. I just remember I had
not all. I couldn't do all six, but I could do one.
I had a brilliant cousin, Sam Vulchenbaum. The Mr. Vulch would come in there. He'd just, you know, rip it around, have it done, and then they'd hand it to me, and I'd be like... You know, with one piece out, and sure. Somehow it's
what do we do now?
Yeah,
it's dangerous. All right, more show. Mark Harmon is here from our sports department. If you want to jump in, yes.
I get to do another segment?
Yes, stick around. We got more with Mark Harmon. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to throw a comment our way or a question. We're here for you. More after this. It's Bill Leff and Mark Harmon filling in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's me, Bill Leff, along with my friend Mark Harmon, who is in our sports department. But you're not only here to talk about sports.
I'm not. I'd love to talk everything that's going on in the...
Recipes? You do recipes?
I do
People
recipes.
People want questions about soufflés. You're here for them?
I make a mac and cheese. I use a Kraft single, and then I put the noodles in there, and then I put some milk and butter. It's
Boy,
delicious.
Does that sound good. Does that sound tasty. People are texting us at 312-981-7200. They don't want us to forget about the Cubs' golden era infield that included, of course, Ron Santo, Don Kessinger, Glenn Beckert, and Ernie Banks. Now, even in their heyday in the 60s into the 70s, all four of those guys did not start in any All-Star game together. As great as they were as an infield, that never happened.
Yeah, the only time it's ever happened before was the 1963 St. Louis Cardinals. Don't ask me the names of that team because I just couldn't get myself
to
research it.
Trying to think of who that would have been.
I could pull that for you real quick.
All right, we'll figure out what that is.
And there was we missed this one. The 2008 Cubs had seven All-Stars. I just repressed their memory, too, because
Alfonso... It was a sad period.
I mean, Alfonso Soriano, Kosuke Fukudome... Ryan Dempster, great member of the team right now on WGN.
Mm-hmm.
Carlos Marmol, Zambrano Wood, and Giovanni Soto, who did not deserve to be an All-Star.
I remember Carlos Zambrano that year had an anger management class for the rest of the team that was very successful. Now, none of those guys, I don't think, that year, I don't think any of those guys started the Cubs game, the All-Star game. I don't think.
I don't think so either. And, you know, that was a team that hopefully... This year's version will not do. Go
right.
To the playoffs and not win one single game.
Right. Is it fair that the Cubs have seven representatives and the White Sox only have one? So it's not just Chicago that treats the Cubs with some special treatment, but it's the entire nation.
You could make an argument for a couple of White Sox, including Todd Frazier, who's leading the American League in home runs.
Yeah.
That would be an argument.
The Cubs have the leader in home runs in the National League. The White Sox have the leader in the American League.
Pretty amazing. And Frazier's now one behind Mark Trumbo. So he's got 23, and Trumbo's got 24 of the Baltimore Orioles. But regardless, 23 homers is a significant number. However, also a significant number that Todd Frazier has been hitting .200 the whole season.
Oh, there's that, I guess.
That's a something.
Sort of a strike.
He's up to .210, though, because he's gotten hot as of late.
Yeah.
And they've got this final vote. You guys know about this? Where they vote one more player in. It's
right.
Kind of a web thing. I was thinking David Ross might appear on there, but he is not.
Wouldn't
the
that
National
be nice
League.
In his last season with
the
Cubs?
No Cubs or no Sox on this final vote, which apparently all the ballots are due July 8th.
Mm.
David Ross might be going on the disabled list. He's got a little concussion, perhaps, issue as well. So that would factor into the All-Star game weekend.
All right. Now, this needs to be asked since we've been talking about it for the past 15 or 20 minutes. Should the All-Star game be voted on by fans who sometimes vote incorrectly, or should it be voted on by players or who makes the final decision?
See, I think fans should vote on things like, you know, the concessions and beer should be available at the particular venue. I know there's these high price contracts that are years in the making, but no, is my answer. Let the broadcasters, let the players, let the coaches make the decision. You can have a whole cool fan vote and do something with it, but just the whole... I mean, baseball's so provincial, right? I mean, who watches the San Diego Padres, Houston Astros? I mean, we don't know what these guys are doing.
What about this rule that every team must be represented by at least one player? That skews who goes sometimes. Is that a good rule, or should that rule be abolished?
I don't like it. Why? No. If you're an all-star, you're an all-star. If you're not, you're not. What is this? The old participation trophy in Major League Sports, which I don't have anything problem. I don't have a problem with the participation trophy, but in professional sports, I don't think it necessarily belongs.
But the league, wants people from all over the country to enjoy the game, and they know that there's a couple of teams that just aren't very good and don't have any players worthy of it. And in their minds, why would anyone in that city watch the game if their players aren't in it?
Right. I don't believe that.
No?
I think that those people in that city probably will, if they're baseball fans, would
watch anyway.
Would watch the All-Star game. I mean, also, there's the other side of it that this game counts.
Well, right.
If it really counts, wouldn't you want the best roster if you're the American or National League?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So there's that. You know what rule I'd like to put in there?
What is this?
It's the re-enter rule. So, like, the best players always start, right, in theory? So Bryce Harper, Chris Bryant, they start, then they get a couple at bats, and then they're out of the game. Come the ninth inning, you have a tie game. I'd like to have you be able to re-enter, say it's 2-2 in the ninth, and then you can send Chris Bryant back up to the plate.
And that's unlimited? You let
one-time re-enter.
Oh, just a one-time? Per player or per team?
Per player.
Per player. That's interesting.
But I'm willing to, you know, we can boil this down to like 5 re-enters. I'm okay with that. Even 3.
You played Little League baseball at some point.
Loved it.
Through most of the Little League years that I played, that was standard on a team. If you were in a game, they would take you out for subs in the middle innings, but then you'd go back in for the 5th and 6th, the final innings.
Right.
So that it would be essentially the same rule.
Yeah, and for me, they brought me in the 5th, and then they took me.
You were quickly done.
So go play right.
I had a manager in one league who figured out how to position the players so that they would never bat. We had a couple of kids on our team who I don't think swung a bat once all year long.
That reminds me of like Pony League 7th grade, and the skipper's reading the averages, and he gets to a bunch of them. I just remember one name that I'll... Should I say the real name? Well,
no.
No. Okay.
Yes. No.
Smith. Keats. Smith has no average.
He never batted?
No.
He just didn't get any hits.
He was 0 for the season. Oh. He just kept on going down the line. Leff has no average. Carmen has no average. Burrow, 325.
Darn
Snyder,
right.
Snyder has no average.
Oh, no.
Bunted every time.
A lost art, even in Little League, Ryan. I can't explain it, but
their baseman couldn't get the ball to first. It worked out great.
All right, so the All-Star game is held. It's next week, right?
Yeah, Tuesday.
It's next Tuesday.
Right.
And is it still a 3-day weekend for the All-Stars, or do they do a 4-day? I'm trying to remember.
I think it's up to 4 now.
Is it 4?
Yeah, they
don't start those games up till Thursday, right? Something like that?
The home run contest is always the day before on Monday, and then the All-Star game is on Tuesday. But I think there are days off for all the players the day before the home run derby and the day after the All-Star game, I think.
Yeah, they don't start back up until Friday. It used to be on
Friday,
Thursdays.
Yeah.
So, they're backing it off another day because guys come out of it tired. Chris Bryant's not going to be in the home run derby by his own volition.
Just said he didn't want to play.
Yeah, I'm a little tired.
I think Bryce Harper said the same thing, didn't he?
Bryce Harper said the same thing. Mike Trout, who they wanted the Angels to go, won't do it.
Yeah.
Is there a curse for that? Don't a lot of guys say they put so much into it, it's so long, and they swing so many times that maybe it throws them off the game a little bit?
That's what they say. You can't argue. I mean, they're having the experience, right? So I'll believe them. Todd Frazier, though, who won it last year, he wants to be in there. Let's go.
Good. So, good.
And it doesn't really matter. I mean, who's ever up there, just still entertaining.
Now, they'll find a guy. There are sports where they will find a guy if he's elected to the All-Star team and chooses to not play in it. But in baseball, if you choose not to be in the home run derby, there's no penalty, right?
Yeah, I guess that's different.
Yeah.
Right. You got to be.
It's not the actual game.
Well, that's what happened, you know, in the Stanley Cup, or in the NHL, rather. This year, Jonathan Toews didn't want to, hadn't sat, whatever it was, he didn't sit. He sat out the last game before, or didn't sit out the last game, and so he had to.
One game suspension, right?
He had to miss the first game after the break.
Right.
Yeah. Which was not great.
No. No.
I don't think that's why they didn't win the cup this year, though.
No, that's not what held them back. Don't worry.
Probably not.
Mark Carmen is here from our sports department. We're going to take a quick break. Ryan has the news, and then more show coming your way next. It's Bill and Mark in for Wendy on WGN. Ryan, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff along with Mark Carmen. My friend Mark Carmen from the sports department here at WGN filling in for Wendy from now until 3 o'clock. Wendy will be back on Monday. A myriad of fill-in hosts will be doing their best to replace her over the next couple of days. Good luck to all of them.
It takes an army.
It does take, it takes an army. Tomorrow, the U.S. Army will be filling in for Wendy for the first half of the show.
I will be listening. That's going to be amazing.
We got to get more chairs. We need a lot more chairs. Earlier, Eric Zorn was sitting exactly where you're sitting, Mark, and we were talking about patriotism or lack of patriotism. I didn't realize until it was over on the 4th of July, America is now 240 years old, which means it was 40 years ago that we, our nation, celebrated the bicentennial. Doesn't seem like it was 40 years ago, but it was. So we were talking about whether or not the country is or is not as patriotic as it used to be. This story then comes up, and I was a little bit aware of this, but I didn't know how it ended until just recently. There was a kid the other day, oh, I shouldn't say kid, he's 22 years old, who decided as part of a protest that he was going to burn the American flag.
Right.
And everybody was kind of debating over exactly what will happen to him as a result of this. Well, now it turns out he will face no charges whatsoever in the burning of the American flag. I'll read you the story from ABC News. An Illinois prosecutor says she will not file charges against the man whose flag-burning protest led to his arrest on Independence Day. Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz said in a statement on Tuesday that she will not file charges against Brighton Mellett of Urbana, Illinois, because flag burning is, and I quote here, protected free speech. Pictures posted on Mellett's Facebook page over the weekend showed him holding a burning American flag. He wrote that he is, and I quote again, not proud to be an American. The message also mentions atrocities committed against people of color, those in poverty, women, and the LGBT community. The message appears to have been removed, but the pictures still remain. Urbana police were alerted to the post and say that officers noticed commenters threatening Mellett and his employer. That would be Walmart. Police say that Mellett was taken into custody out of concern for his safety. The 22-year-old Mellett has not been able to comment on the incident. All right, so a couple of questions, but the number one question is this. To the best of my knowledge, it's not illegal to burn an American flag. It's in extremely poor taste to burn an American flag, but it's not illegal to burn an American flag. So what do you do with a guy like this?
That's a great question, because I don't think anybody, even the most patriotic person on the planet, would want freedom of speech being taken away.
Right.
Right? So he, you know, it's a, like, for me, looking at the picture on Instagram, first of all, he puts in a hashtag, you better burn that flag. Like, as in he's telling us to burn the flag just like he is. It's one thing if he wants to make his own statement, whatever it's about. Okay, you're in your corner, I'm going to be in my corner.
Right.
That hashtag bothers me more than anything else. And the other side of it is, what exactly are you trying to accomplish?
Right.
And if you're angry about X, Y, and Z, and that's cool. There's a lot of, you know, stuff going on in the world that is angry, that makes all of us angry, right?
I'm angry about the same issues that make this guy upset also upset me. But never as upset as I get about the things that he just mentioned about atrocities committed against people of color, or about poor people, or right, about that women aren't treated fairly, or people in the LGBT community. I've never thought the best way to combat right, these things is to burn a flag.
Right. I mean, we're going to talk about Alton Sterling later in the show, who was murdered in Louisiana, which is making, you know, huge news, and other police murder. So, listen, this bothers everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's a million different groups you can join. There's a lot of ways to go about it. I mean, I at the end of the day, I would think that he's pretty happy to be in this country and to be able to burn that flag. Imagine if you did that in another country, what would happen to you?
They'd chop you into bits.
That's right. You wouldn't be sitting there getting threatened. You wouldn't be here.
Right.
So if you can't see that and can't respect that, which clearly this young man can't, That's just sad, and that's why it's such a bad choice.
Yep. Let's go to the phones and the texts. We're at 312-981-7200. We're telling you the story of a 22-year-old guy. Brighton Mellett is his name. He lives in Urbana here in Illinois. On Independence Day, he posted pictures of himself burning an American flag out of protest for several things. What do you do with a guy like this? Let's start out with Joanne. Hey, Joanne. Hi, you're on WGN.
Hi. I was just going to say that the Supreme Court, I believe, voted on that it being free speech. It was right after all the protests, during all the protests of the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
and because there were so many young people burning flags in protest, and so it finally got that far. But as far as the other patriotism goes, I'm not sure. But I do think that a lot of young people are rather ignorant of American history. And I give the show Hamilton as an example, because they've never heard of him. They don't know who he is.
Of Alexander Hamilton?
Right. It's not entirely their fault. But, I mean, when I was in school, we were taught all about him and all his, you know, I've known about him from my, you know, from grade school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, there, you know, that's another thing. And then it's really very obnoxious to us to see somebody burning the flag. But there again, you know, they waive free speech for practically everything. And so that's the law and the rule of law, whatever happened to that.
Mark?
So that's all. That's really all I have.
No, thanks, Joanne.
My
thoughts, again, are... There's something beautiful about, and nauseating, but beautiful at the same time, where we can have this discussion mm-hmm. on the radio, in this, you know, right here, right now, can you burn the flag? To me, that's a beautiful thing. And mm-hmm. you want to make a statement. What's your statement about? Like, I want to hear what you're talking about. And it would be a lot more interesting if you could eloquently put that together. Even if it was on some Facebook post to 50 of your friends that none of us saw, you got a lot more attention this way. But that would be a lot more interesting, and maybe you could actually gain some momentum and become somebody who has a voice rather than your one moment in time where people are just going to look at you like you're a complete lunatic. This has been going on for, I mean, she went back to the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'll bring it in the sports realm. Like, Muhammad Ali
mm-hmm.
would not fight in Vietnam, was heavily criticized at the time, but he made a huge statement, gave up huge money,
right?
Wasn't able to fight in the middle of his career, and he ended up being a beloved figure. Now that was he didn't burn the flag; he made a statement. Now he had a huge platform to do it, unlike our young man here.
But look at how polarizing what he did was. People saying he was going back on his country. This was arguably the greatest athlete in the world at the time, and people were saying he's betraying his country.
Right.
That's almost, if not more harmful than what this guy's doing.
Oh,
isn't it?
For sure. Well, he had a bigger platform. Everybody saw it. But yeah. But there was also a lot more people with him at the time, and particularly over a period of time. I don't think, again, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think anybody wants to take the liberty away. But it's a very hard thing to watch. And I wouldn't call myself Mr. Patriot.
Like, right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, my dad fought in World War II.
For which side?
He was with the Americans.
Texas or Allen?
Yeah, it was.
You don't have to say if you don't want to.
He was a little conflicted, but, he stayed true.
That's fine.
So, you know.
Wait, let me get a couple more calls in real quick. Hey, Matt, thanks for hanging on. It's Bill F. and Mark Harmon. What are your thoughts on this?
You talking to me?
Yeah, Matt, go ahead. It's Matt, right?
Yes.
Oh, go on.
Well, I want to say there's nothing wrong with burning the flag. The flag is honored every time it's burned. This is one of the few places on earth where you can do it. And every time anybody, even some idiot who's on the wrong side of whatever question it may be, burns it, that draws attention to the fact that you can do that here.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this flag stands for. That flag stands for the fact that a person can burn it in protest.
But if you were walking down a street, Matt, you're walking down the street that you live in and you see a guy in his yard just spraying on some lighter fluid on a flag and setting a match to it, that with everything you just said, that would still tear at you, wouldn't it, a little bit?
Well, the way I would feel would have no difference because it is his right. And as long as his rights don't infringe upon mine, my opinion of him exercising his rights is irrelevant.
Yeah.
He's got a right to do it because he lives in America the same as I do. I got a right to have an opinion about it. But if he's not infringing on anyone else's right, that flag stands for the right to do that.
Sure, I guess
that's what it means.
Matt, you are a level-headed, intelligent, well-thought-out individual. And if you have room in your family, I'd consider joining.
Mark wants in. Let him in your family, Matt.
What do you think, Matt?
Okay, do you work?
Occasionally.
Well, it's radio, so not really.
It's an up-and-down thing, Matt. It's always evolving.
Matt, thank you. We appreciate the call.
Do I work?
Thanks so much. Well, that's what a dad would ask.
Well, I was offering some companionship. Matt was like, got any dough? Can we go to dinner?
Right.
Do I have to take on more debt?
He's looking at this as more long term.
Right. That's a brilliant Matt right there.
What are your thoughts on this guy? 22 years old, from Urbana, decides as a show of protest, he's going to burn the American flag. Is that okay? It is freedom of speech, right? But to what point? We're at 312-981-7200. We'll take your calls and texts next. It's Bill F. and Mark Harmon in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right, it's Bill F. and it's Mark Harmon talking about this guy, 22 years old. His name is Brayton Mellett. He lives in Urbana. He posted photographs of himself just this past Independence Day, 4th of July, burning the American flag, says he's not proud to be an American. He talked about all the people who have had atrocities committed against them, including people of color, people who are poor, women, the LGBT community, and on and on. So people are kind of reacting as to whether or not that's the best way to show that protest.
Right. Well, the young man made his statement.
And got a lot of attention, which was his goal.
And got a ton. Well, who knows what his goal was, but he certainly has gotten a ton. And we're talking about him right now. So right. I suppose moderate congratulations on that.
Jim has something that both you and I knew would come up eventually, and here it is. Hi, Jim. What did you want to say?
I'm not sure, but was it Rick Monday that ran up to the guy and some kid that were about to burn the flag, and did he snatch it away from him?
Yes, he did. That was in Los Angeles, was it not?
I can't recall, but I was pretty sure that it was Rick Monday, but
it was
my all-time favorite baseball play.
Dodger Stadium, April 25th, 1976. There were a couple protesters that ran into left center field, tried to set fire to the flag, and Monday, who was playing center at the time, came running in and took care of that. So
and became an American hero at that moment.
They could have had a gun or something,
Right.
He just didn't care.
Well, he's talked about it. He's been interviewed about it several times over the years, and he just said it was such an impulse reaction. He saw two people holding a flag and about to burn it, and he just said something kicked in and said, I got to make that not happen, and good for him.
Sure. Steve Stone was on the mound. Yes, I was. And Ted Sizemore popped out. Monday dashed over, grabbed the flag, and Stone, he said, yeah!
How about that? Yeah. Good memory, Jim. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thank
Take
you.
Care. Thanks very much.
A lot of people supporting the right here, which I think is pretty impressive for 720 WGN and your show, Bill Leff.
Well, here's what we're getting mostly by way of text. Very similar messages. I'll just read you one that's kind of representative. Flag burning. I don't like it. I don't agree with it. But the fact that you can do it is what makes America great. That's from a listener, Steve. And that has been the consensus on the text anyway.
I mean, that's my take.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful thing that in this country you can do that. Try that elsewhere. See what happens.
Alan, you kind of are of the same mind, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, America is very hypocritical. I mean, you start off, all men are created equal, except for you black people. You say you're not equal, you know. And then we have the Second Amendment, and then when people exercise it, then people, you know, they act like, you know, that's not part of our framework. It's absolutely, it's not a bad thing to burn the flag. It's, you're exercising your Second Amendment right. It's a powerful, it's provocative, but it's literally part of what makes America great is that you can do things like this. So, you know, people need to really understand how powerful these amendments are. And, you know, it's just like, you know, when folks say, you know, I might not like what you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it.
Sure.
It's the same thing. So we can't be hypocritical. If the guy wants to burn the flag, celebrate his right to do that as an American. You don't have to like it, like that other caller said that was more articulate than I am. But that's his absolute right. It's what makes America great. So people need to just get over it and realize that, you know, we have a Second Amendment. And it's there for a lot of reasons, and this is one of them. It's provocative. It's powerful. But this is what it is. At its finest.
Well said, Alan.
Thank you, Alan.
Very well said. Thank you. Appreciate it. A couple things come to mind that are sort of tied into this. That Westboro church that keeps going to funerals and sets up a protest. You know, they're as annoying could possibly be. But you say to yourself, well, in America, the way that we're set up is, even though these people are so detestable, you got to give them their platform. The other one that comes to mind immediately are the Nazi groups that marched on Skokie. You know, they found one of the most Jewish communities in America, and they decided decades ago, where better to get their message across of Nazism than to march in Skokie? And the judges decided, yeah, we gotta let them do it. It's, again, it's freedom of speech. As much as we deplore what they stand for,
I hate Illinois Nazis.
That's the best take that's ever been said on this
right,
station.
Right.
I'm with you, Burrow. I am anti-Illinois Nazis.
You
as
guys,
well.
Just to be clear, are not fans of the Illinois Nazis. Am
no,
I getting this right? All right,
that was the line in Blues Brothers,
right? Yes, it is.
Okay, I nailed
yes,
it. Right?
It is.
Okay, good.
Or and Indiana Jones quote: "Nazis, I hate those guys." So, in general, I think you'll find a lot more people against the Nazis, and I get that.
I'm pro Skokie too. It's a great community.
Yes it is. So it all ties in. I mean, really, when you stop and think about it, the burning of the flag is as symbolic could be. It's cloth. What you're burning is cloth. So if that flag is not red, white, and blue and stars and stripes and just orange and purple and has no direction whatsoever, a guy could burn that all day long and nobody would even look at him. But as soon as that cloth is turned into an American flag, then you've got an issue. Right.
Yes, that was like a weird magic trick that you just jumped into there. That's true.
Thank you very much.
When there's stars on it, it's red, white, and blue.
Right.
Yes, it does change things.
But that works too for Bibles, for Qurans, things
oh,
like
absolutely.
That. You know, I mean, it's just
it's
a book.
But
on the other hand,
right, but
there's a lot of meaning there.
So what we're burning there is the symbolism of either a book, as Ryan just pointed out, or a cloth becoming a flag, as Doug Henning Mead just pointed out. So it is. It's what you're doing is you're destroying a symbol more than you are what it stands for. Look at all the people who have given their lives for the freedom of this country. So I would have to think, for those people to watch an American flag burn, that's as painful as can be.
No question. The folks that have died, more than anyone else, the folks that have actually put their lives on the line, and some who, you know, are related to people that have lost lives for this country.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you remotely even stomach that? You're talking about burning things. I don't mean to keep on floating back into the sports world, but I am who I am. These things
yes,
happen.
Sure.
You know, Kevin Durant leaves Oklahoma City. You got all these people out in Oklahoma having bonfires for his jersey.
I know.
It's like, that's a human being, man.
I know.
You can't, you know, I understand you don't want to leave your basketball team, but burning his jersey in the South,
yeah,
African-American guy, it's
right.
That's hard for me to watch.
I agree. I'm with you. Pat, you're going to be the final word on this. What do you think, sir?
I believe that everything that's been said is correct, and it's true about the Constitution providing us the right to free speech. But I think what everybody is failing to see is that all of the people, all of the service people, since the beginning of our country and our revolution, have died, sacrificed, or bled to provide that right
yeah.
for people to do that. And I think they should just respect it. That's all.
You would think. You would hope.
You would, Pat. I'm with you, man.
Pat, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Take care.
All right, we need to take a quick break. We have to take a break, Mark. That you know how it works. Ryan will give you the news, and then a lot more show, including a very tragic story in Louisiana. We will get to that in a little bit. Stick around. It's Bill F. and Mark Harmon, who's sitting in for Wendy on WGN. Ryan, thanks very much. It's Bill F. along with Mark Harmon, who's filling in for Wendy. Wendy will be back on Monday. Terrible, terrible story out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Aaron Katursky of ABC News joins us right now to take us through the steps of this horrendous story. Aaron, thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. Oh, do we have Aaron? Hold on.
There you go.
Aaron, is that you?
Good afternoon.
There
yeah,
you
this
are.
Is a, this is another in a line of shootings that have claimed a life of a young black man. The circumstances seem to be a little bit different than some other shootings. Nonetheless, the protest chant has been the same. And today, in a series of fast-moving developments, we learned a little bit more about the altercation that took Alton Sterling's life. It started with a call from police on Tuesday to a distress call. Somebody said that Sterling was selling CDs outside a convenience store and had threatened him with a gun. So the working premise of the officers was that they were dealing with an armed man. And then you see the surveillance or the cell phone video that captures all this plays that out, where the officers are seen tackling, wrestling to the ground, and then, pressing on a head and leg. And then one of them yells, "Gun! He's got a gun!" And then you hear on the camera the shots. Four of them you hear although the coroner said that Sterling died from two bullet wounds. The shots appeared to come at close range. And today, the police chief said that there's no question that Sterling was armed, but he had a lot of questions about what exactly transpired.
Right, and correct me if I'm wrong, Aaron, the gun was in the pocket, and the convenience store owner who saw the whole thing said that he never actually was holding the gun. I mean, to me, when you watch
the eyewitness says. Now, police didn't confirm that account. They said that'll come out in the investigation, which was turned over immediately to the feds. So the police, are the two officers involved were identified. They were put on paid leave, and federal prosecutors and the FBI are going to move in and take it from here.
Does this feel similar though to you to Eric Garner in New York? Because that's how I looked at it.
Yeah. Well, a little bit. Obviously, there was no Garner was unarmed and died of a chokehold, not a shooting. But similar kind of a thing where there wasn't seemingly anything to provoke the officers. Although there was a disturbance call, Eric Garner, the officers here in New York, ended up just kind of happening upon him and asked him to stop selling loose cigarettes. This guy, we don't know that he was breaking any law. But there was a call of a disturbance that he had threatened somebody with a gun. Police today, kind of declined to get into the specifics other than outline the bare bones of what the officers are responding to and kind of what the next steps are.
How does the fact that there is a fairly clear video, a cell phone video of this, how exactly does that impact this, Eric? Aaron, it seems to me, like the mere fact that this is captured fairly vividly on video, you kind of get a feel for what happened there.
Well, you do, and obviously they'll want to take the account of officers to see what they were thinking. But you heard the governor of Louisiana say that the video was, disturbing to say the least.
Yeah.
And I think, that echoes the anybody who's seen it. I think it felt the same way where the shots appear to come at very close range, like point blank range, and come repeatedly and without seeming provocation. I mean, he was on the ground. You did hear an officer say he's got a gun. Now, the gun, according to eyewitnesses, was later pulled from Sterling's pocket. But the whether it was flashed to the officers, that you can't see from the position of the camera, the specifics, hand movements or gestures or whatnot of the victim. But it doesn't on its face appear to show any kind of provocation.
Aaron, you cover these stories all the time, and they're one statistic I read today. Since 2013, of the 4,054 people killed by police, only 6 cases have led to convictions of officers. Do you see anything changing along those lines? Because it just seems to me that, we hear these stories and then there's never a conviction and then we just keep on going.
Well, but I think there's definitely a change. I mean, the reaction was pretty immediate. I think the Associated Press talked to the guy who posted the cell phone video, and he said he did it as a public service because otherwise nothing would come of it. And that seems to be a general, feeling of being aggrieved on the part of many in the black community in a number of cities. Baton Rouge is certainly a city divided, white privilege and black poverty. And, despite some of the pleasantries that the officials were talking about, there was clear anger. And you heard the head of the NAACP locally call for the police chief to resign. And the chief said, we've worked together for 3 years. And he thought that the head of the NAACP was speaking out of emotion and he had no plans to resign. And I think the most heartbreaking of all, regardless of how you feel about it, was the 15-year-old son of Alden Sterling just weeping uncontrollably as his mother, talked about the shooting and her demand for justice. And that was simply heart-wrenching.
Aaron, there was a report earlier today that at least one of the officers, and possibly two, had body cams that they said had fallen off during the scuffle. Is that still a thing, or has that changed?
Something happened with the body cameras. The chief today said that the footage from the body cameras wasn't as good as they had hoped. So whether they fell off or dislodged, or there was something happened with the footage where it wasn't apparently as clear or as useful as perhaps prosecutors would like. Nonetheless, they say there is footage, so it's not like the cameras were disabled. And so we'll see if that captured any sight or sound that could prove useful in the investigation. There's also dash cam video from the police cruiser, if that's useful. They've also made a pitch for any additional cell phone video from bystanders, although the governor said today he was aware of only one video.
Interesting. Aaron, have you heard anything along the lines of some technology coming along where people will not be able to take video? I've heard of that as far as in stadiums, but I'm sure there's a lot of law enforcement officials that would rather these videos do not come out.
Well, I'm sure in some sense if there's wrongdoing, but you know, in another sense, you know, if it can either exonerate the innocent, you know, it's sort of the same debate with body cameras. You know, if there's some action that helps, you know, get the truth out, I think, you know, law enforcement's generally all in favor of it. If it shows them in a bad light, you know, let the chips fall where they may. But, you know, I think you'd want to, what often happens and where police, you know, often get upset is when there's a cell phone video, but that's sort of the only public image. And then, you know, it's hard to fight that with simply an account from an officer or a written report. And that's where it tends to get little problematic for them.
But you would think that officers, knowing what we all know, which is that everybody has access to a phone on a camera now, that you would do things as by the book as you could possibly do them, and yet these incidents just keep seeming to pile up over and over again.
Well, it's true, and in, you know, in some cases, you don't know what the circumstances are. You know, the to me, the more similar one was Tamir Rice in Cleveland, where these two officers just rock up, and you know, within 2 seconds, guys shooting, thinking that the gun the kid was carrying was real. You know, so again, we don't know the circumstances with the gun and you know, whether he had pulled it from his pocket or not. Eyewitnesses said no. The store owner, the convenience store owner who was the one saying that the gun was in the pocket, also said he has pretty clear surveillance video from his store cameras. So maybe that will give a more full accounting of what happened.
In the cases where it seems pretty clear and there's no conviction that ends up happening, Tamir Rice being one of them, that was 400 days and no conviction. What do you think's holding that back, Aaron? What needs to change as far as actually getting a conviction when it seems pretty much night and day as to what happened?
Well, first you got to bring them up on charges, and that, you know, and that's sort of a you know, left to prosecutors' discretion as to whether they can win the case. And often it's, you know, what may seem clear cut to the public. I mean, we're going through this with Hillary Clinton, right? And then you have, you know, the FBI saying they couldn't win the case. So that's one. And then, you know, two, as we've seen in Baltimore, you know, the public outcry isn't necessarily aligned with facts. And, you know, in Baltimore, the officers have been found not guilty. And, you know, in that case, no video, but also no real evidence that of the prosecutor's theory that a rough ride killed Freddie Gray. And so there's a real question. It's not, I don't think it's easy, but I think you're right. The prevalence of the cases suggests that there's something that needs to perhaps change.
Are Baton Rouge police ramping up for a night, if not more nights, of protests because of this? They must be, huh?
Well, they said there would be officers out. I mean, I thought it was interesting. There were no officers out, apparently, last night. The local paper, The Advocate, said that, you know, the protesters kind of simmered. But there was also no damage. There was no real need for officers to be out. There was no violence associated with the protesters. And so you heard a number of calls today for continued peace.
And you mentioned, Aaron, earlier that the gentleman who lost his life, 37-year-old Alton Sterling, he had 5 kids, and his 15-year-old son is up there with his mom and super emotional. It's just, I think it's important just to bring out. I mean, this guy wasn't, you know, somebody that was just on his own. I mean, he had a family, the whole deal.
The mother of the 15-year-old made mention that police had taken the life of someone whose children depended on him, you know, for their own livelihood. And yeah, I'm not sure that Alton Sterling was necessarily up for sainthood, but his family and the community said he certainly didn't deserve to die like this.
Do we know if there was much of an arrest record on him, Aaron?
You know, the police didn't say immediately, but there had been reports that he had altercations with police, but there was no immediate word of a of a record that I've seen yet.
Well, we appreciate it. This is, and boy, you've delivered more than your share of these stories to us and to the rest of the country. But what a hard story coming out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Again, the shooting death of Alton Sterling there in Baton Rouge. We appreciate it, Aaron. Thanks so much.
Okay, guys.
Take care. Aaron Kotursky from ABC News. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have more show for you. It's Bill Leff and Mark Harmon sitting in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. A bunch of texts have come in as we talk about this death in Louisiana, shooting death. And if you haven't seen the video of it yourself, it's readily available on the internet. It's as you would imagine, it's very hard to watch.
Extremely disturbing.
Anytime you see a human being losing their life on video, it's extremely tough to watch. But there was a couple of texts wanting to know. Let me see if this is the best one. What about the fact that this is Alton Sterling we're referring to, what about the fact that he was carrying a gun, and was that gun being carried legally or illegally? Louisiana is a conceal and carry state. So if you watch the video, and again, it's not 100% conclusive, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't appear from anything I've seen anyway that this man, Alton Sterling, had any kind of grip on the weapon, that he was threatening police officers with the weapon. He apparently had it on him at the time. And you see one of the cops, as soon as somebody says he has a gun, one of the police officers takes out his weapon and shoots him several times.
Right. And that was when he was well on the ground and had two officers on him. And let's be clear. Whenever I've had these discussions on the station, Bill, I've always said, listen, 99.9% of officers of law are doing work that, A, I wouldn't have the courage to do and are tremendous people.
Agreed.
And all of that. But let's look at, there's also some that aren't, okay? And this is just the reality. So judging by the text line, people are super defensive here. Louisiana's conceal and carry, and yeah. From what I read today, He had purchased a gun within the last 2 weeks because there was people that were stealing CDs, which is what he was selling.
Yeah.
So he was protecting his quote unquote business. So, and if you watch the video and you talk to one and you listen to one of the eyewitnesses who was there a couple feet away, it's very clear that what happened in this incident did not have to occur, and he was never actually holding the weapon. Now he's a huge guy. It wasn't like when you're just watching the video that he was out of control and there was no threatening movements.
Yeah.
So it's just when you watch it, and I recommend you do that before you comment here, it's like you just kind of wonder how in the world did you go from 0 to 1,000 in 1 second there?
It is hard to fathom exactly what went on in that very short span of time where they bring him down to the ground and then all of a sudden they're shooting at him. There's never a time where the police officers, it didn't seem anyway, lost control of him. They had him the whole time. And if it is a state where you're allowed to conceal and carry a weapon, that's exactly what he's doing. He wasn't waving the gun at them. He wasn't threatening to shoot them. At least it doesn't appear in the video. You know, I'll be honest, you don't get 100% crispness. The camera does kind of bounce around a little bit. But from what we're seeing, what I'm seeing anyway, it seems like an unjustified shooting. It seems like.
It very much doesn't. And listen, there from Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, I mean, it just keeps going. Freddie Gray, Sandra Bland, Michael Brown. I mean, it's just the names keep coming. And people can dig in their heels on this and think that it's just like you're completely attacking whoever. I don't even know who you feel like why you're under attack. The reality is, this is happening way, way, way too often in this country, in this city as well. And it's the conversation needs to be had and things need to change. That's the end of the day, bottom line. And I don't know why people are fighting against that.
Gary, you have a comment exactly as to what Mark's referring to, don't you?
Well, yeah, I did. And I have to admit, I just got off work and didn't see the video and just heard the news listening to you, but you know, it's tragic that somebody did lose their life.
Sure.
And again, I had questions like, number one, he's selling CDs. Was he legally selling them? Did he have permission to do it from the store owner or from the city to be selling CDs?
Does it matter though, Gary? I mean, does it really matter?
Well, if he's doing something illegal in the first place,
I mean, it's not a capital punishment to sell CDs.
Right.
Correct.
Selling illegal CDs, if they were illegal, doesn't equal getting shot to death. You know, right.
You just go up to them and say, hey, take your CDs, pack them up, and get the heck right. out of here and go home.
Right.
You know, and then the other question is, why does he have a gun? Now, maybe he's got a permit to carry it legally, which a lot of states do. But then, again, somebody made a complaint that he was threatened by this person with the gun. We don't know that, if he pulled the gun out and threatened him and put it back in his pocket, or if he just said, I got a gun, get away from me, you know, or something will happen. You don't know.
Those are all questions that we hope we'll have answers to in the near future. But do yourself a favor, Gary, if you can. And again, it's hard to watch this because a man is about to die before your eyes. But watch the video and try to figure out why they went from 0 to 60 in almost no time at all and shot this guy.
Yeah. Well, in the heat of battle, when two guys or two officers are wrestling at somebody and somebody else gun, if the other person is not in a position to see his hands, to see the gun himself, he may be taking the other officer's word for it.
Sure.
And wanted to end the situation before it got worse.
Absolutely.
Just because he's on the ground doesn't mean he can't pull a gun and shoot the officer.
Oh, I know. I know that.
Yeah, but they had his arms pretty well behind his back. But okay.
But watch the video, Gary.
Watch the video, Gary.
Yeah, I didn't see the video, so it's you know, I'm just trying to.
No, I know. We're all trying to figure out how that could happen. We get it. Exactly. Gary, thank you. Appreciate it. Have a good week.
I mean, you.
All right, you too.
Take care.
Tamir Rice in Cleveland was a 12-year-old kid playing in a park.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, come on.
I know. These do seem as unjustified could be. So it's one of those wait and see things. You got to wait and see the way they figure it out. It always does disturb me too. I guess they've not been found guilty of anything. So if you're going to suspend these guys, you have to suspend them with pay. But I always find that a little disconcerting that these guys are getting paid as though they're working full hours when in reality they're not. You know, that's you pile that on the list of disturbing aspects.
Yeah,
to this.
I've never even thought about the dollar aspect of it. That's not great either.
No, none of it's great. None of it's great. All right, we need to take a quick break. News is next. Ryan has the news, and then we have more show. It's Bill and Mark in for Wendy on WGN. Thank you so much, Ryan. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill Leff. And, of course, you know Mark Carmen. He's filling in for Wendy Snyder. Hello, Mark.
Do they know me, though, Bill? Do they really
know me? Can anyone really know you?
I mean, I'm a very complicated guy.
I don't think anyone can ever really know you. We had several people call in and text in, and we did not get to these. But several people said essentially the same thing. Hey, you guys, meaning myself and Mark, you guys haven't been police officers. You don't know what it's like to be in a moment like that where you're afraid for your own life and you're doing your best to subdue a potential criminal. And I agree. And I have nothing but respect for police officers.
Me too.
As you just pointed out, 99.99999% of them do a good job on a daily basis. But for some reason, there seems to be more and more incidents of guys who just aren't doing that good job. And I don't know. This case has not been finished yet. We don't know exactly what went down in Louisiana. But when you watch this video, I dare anybody to watch it and not feel a little bit of a pain in your stomach saying to yourself, hey, this guy doesn't need to be shot at, you know?
Right. And people are also saying that he was not a saint, which he wasn't. If you look at Alton Sterling, he was a registered sex offender after a 2000 conviction for carnal knowledge of a juvenile. The circumstances of that case were not immediately clear. I'm reading here from the New York Post. Your records say he was released of his offense in October of 2004. Previously arrested for aggravated battery, criminal damage to property, unauthorized entry, and domestic abuse battery. 2009, sentenced to 5 years in prison for marijuana possession and for carrying an illegal weapon with a controlled dangerous substance. These are all terrible things and bad choices. However, let's remember that this is not the one incident in the country. You're talking about the 558th human being shot by a police officer this year.
How many? Just say the number again.
558.
Wow.
And to go back to 2013, there's been over 4,000 police shootings, and only 6 of those have resulted in conviction. So
numbers are out of whack.
Numbers are out of whack. And if you can't see that, then you're looking with a pretty biased eye, to be honest.
262 says, why do we always assume that officers can't be bad guys? There are bad guys in all professions. are not the officers supposed to be trained. You know, I'm not sure why that sentence kind of just ends there. I don't know if there was supposed to be more to that sentence. We've seen in similar incidents when something like this happens, they will change the training regimen for police officers a little bit. And I never know if that's effective or not. I don't know exactly what needed to have been done differently in this case, but when you watch the video, I think a lot of people get the same conclusion that I got, is that this guy may or may not have been doing something wrong, but whatever he may or may not have been doing didn't need to result in him being shot to death.
Right, and there's a million other things. This guy was selling CDs outside this store for years. He was known by the store owner, Abdullah Mufafi, I hope I'm saying that correctly, as the, quote, CD man. It's not like he just showed up there one day and was doing some... I mean, this was what he did. He was also a guy who was living in a shelter, and he had supposedly had gotten the gun because somebody who also was selling CDs had been robbed, so he purchased it for protection, but never, quote, would have used it. Was this guy a saint? No. Did he deserve to die? I think pretty clear by watching the video, the answer to that is no. And so I just would like to see us do better. That's all, Bill, from this
That's
chair.
Not a lot to ask.
I don't think it is.
We need to try a little bit harder. Now, so the police officers don't know in the moment that all this is going on. They don't know what his history is. And I guess you could look at that from a positive way, and you could look at that as a negative way. You don't know if he has a propensity for violence. You don't know. I don't know that they knew if he had or didn't have a weapon on him. The initial thing, the reason they were there in the first place, was some potential customer of this guy, of Alton Sterling's, had complained that he had a weapon and was waving a weapon around. So I imagine the police are assuming he has a weapon on them. But just the way that it played out, from them finding the weapon, not being aimed at anybody or anything, but that they did find the weapon, from the time that somebody yells, he has a gun, to there being no more Alton Sterling, is just a matter of seconds.
Right, right. And there's one text that came in here, so he was not carrying the gun legally. That's correct.
Right.
If everything that we're reading is correct here, which I have no reason to assume it's not, then yes, that he was carrying the gun illegally.
That was in the New York Post? Is that where you found that?
That was in, yes, correct.
The New York Post. All right, so... New York Daily News, I'm sorry.
I want to make sure we have it correct here.
All right, so they will determine as much as they possibly can in the next couple of days. I just said to you off air, my guess is there will be some sort of protest either tonight or the next few nights there in Louisiana.
I'd say
that seems to be what you see whenever there's one of these shootings takes place. So.
Right, and there were people that were congregating around the convenience store late last night, and I'm sure that will continue. And hey, bringing attention to what's going on in the world should be looked at from, in my perspective, in a positive light. Now, let's not go. We don't need to be. It doesn't need to be looting or anything along those lines. But I think people that are stepping up, doing some form of, we're bringing attention. We will continue to do so.
Yeah,
I support that 100%.
Yeah, sure. All right, a quick break and then a bit more show, and then Brian Noonan will come in. He's filling in for Ro. Stick around. It's Bill Leff and Mark Harmon in for Wendy. And Mark Harmon is here. Normally from our sports department, but we covered a little bit of everything today. Mark, was this up to snuff for you? Was this what you expected?
Bill, you know, I think you've been average overall.
Thank you.
I mean, I know that probably actually is a compliment
that
for you.
That is a compliment.
No, it's been my sincere pleasure to be here with you today. I thank you for having me. And, I'll try to, you know, hold up my end of the bargain for the final 11 minutes of the show.
Now, are you surprised we've gone an hour and 49 minutes without me bringing up the inevitable? There was a topic that you knew I had to bring up legally.
Oh, I think I know where you're going, and now I'm nervous, but go ahead.
Is it okay to discuss this, or would you rather not discuss this?
I probably would rather not, but I'm excited to do it nonetheless, if that makes sense.
I play a little tennis.
So do I.
I've achieved some things on the tennis court the last couple of years that I'm extremely proud of.
Like what?
The one thing, the team that I play for, the Northwestern team, we were the Illinois State champions, the over 40 Illinois State champions last year.
Yeah, that's awesome.
40 and over. I never thought I'd see that in my lifetime, but I did. Lost in the Midwest Regionals to Indiana.
At least you made it to the regionals. That's
made
cool.
It to the regionals, but it was a thrill to do it. But of all the things I've achieved on a tennis court in my life, the one thing I had not been able to do, as hard as I tried in three previous meetings, was to beat you, Mark Carmen, at tennis. And on Saturday, you and I got together, and I beat you at tennis.
Yeah, Bill, you did, and congratulations. It's been hard for me, I'm not going to lie.
It was hard while it was happening. And then afterwards, do you remember what you said as soon as it was done?
Did I say that I was going to take my life? What did
no,
I say?
No, you said you crouched down on the ground as though you were punched in the stomach, and you said, I am sick to my stomach.
I did say that.
And then you didn't say anything else for 5 minutes.
Well, yeah, and you were saying, oh, Mark, you were great. You were great. And I'm like, Bill, I'm very upset right now. I'm inconsolable. I'm going to take this as a meaning of how I'm not going for everything in my life, and how this is going to mean so much more to me than just one tennis match. How I feel like I'm regressing, because we had played three or four times.
We had
before.
Played three times previous, yes.
And I had always won.
Yes.
And now it's a clear I'm going backwards, and I just, you know, I'm putting that I apply that to everything else.
Right.
And so I got
this was a harbinger of things to come in your life.
Well, I was hoping not, but now that you say that,
you're stepping back instead of forward.
Right. And hey, listen, you played a great match. I was a little perturbed again that I wasn't as aggressive as I would like to be. But you know, I was having trouble. You know, the yellow tennis ball, it's got to land in the court.
Right.
So when I tried to hit it with the force that I like to hit it with, it was sailing out. I missed about 17,000 overheads, which
you
I
missed some shots,
which I never do. And you won, and yes. I feel terrible about it, and I will always feel terrible about it.
Good. Thank you. Thank you.
It'll never get better.
I'm sure you've had this when there's one guy. You were the only guy I've played in years that I've not ever beaten. I had never beaten you, so the victory was very sweet for me. But I could just see that it deflated you immeasurably.
Yeah. Well, the internal dialogue that was going on was, you cannot lose to Bill Leff. You cannot lose to Bill Leff. You cannot lose to Bill Leff. Don't do this to yourself.
Right, right.
And then it turned to, you're going to lose to Bill Leff. You're going to lose to Bill Leff. You're going to. When we got to that point,
right.
You know, it was hard to stop that train. And I was trying to say sweet things to myself. You're good enough. You're talented enough.
Right.
You can do it.
People like you.
Right, people like you. There was no mirror, so that was part
right.
of the problem.
Right, you need a mirror.
I should put a mirror in my tennis bag.
That wouldn't look strange at all.
I could have turned it around.
That would be fine. But have to say, to your credit,
yeah.
You're one of those guys, and I so appreciate this in a person who plays any sport. You don't give up. Like, there's never a time where, no matter how far away you are from the ball, and it's improbable that you'll not only get to it but return it, you just don't give up, and I admire that. I love that in a player.
It's the Labrador in me. I'm actually part dog.
Part Labrador.
And I'm just gonna keep chasing until I get there. And sometimes I actually do get there, and I can get it back. And then I'm gonna run around again for you. So that's thank you for that. I do remember one particular point where you hit the ball over my head, and I thought to myself, okay, I'll go running. I'll give it everything I got, and then I got it back.
You returned it.
I did, and I think I actually won that point.
Yes, you did.
I'm gonna start crying.
But it was, you have to admit, it was a fun, good, long match with no easy points. Every point was fought for.
I had no fun. It was a long match.
It wasn't fun at all for you.
It was zero fun.
Good.
I think maybe when I was up early, I was having a drop of fun. But when it started to go the other way, most definitely not fun.
And you had said on the air, on these airwaves on WGN, I believe you even told me that you had told your listeners on the weekends, you would not only not lose to me on Saturday, but you would never lose to me, ever.
Right. Well, see, you have a little bigger forum than I do on the station. You have this, like, daily show that people, you know, listen to all the time.
Sure.
So everyone thinks you're the tennis champion of the station, and whenever it comes up to me, if you ever played Bill Leff, so I had to, like, really, like, draw a line in the sand and say, yes, I played Bill Leff, and I will never, ever lose to Bill
right.
Leff. And now I've lost to
Bill
Now
you've
Leff.
Lost to me.
And, you know, the other sport that we play, I'll never beat you at. Because
ping pong.
You're the greatest ping pong player I've ever seen.
Come on.
Like, no, I'm not
That's
kidding.
That's nice of you. Thank you.
You really should be in the Olympics.
Thank you. Thank you. I've played Olympians. Well, the last time you and I were at Spin together, we played a girl who played for, what country did she?
Oh, she was incredible.
She played for some Norwegian country. I guess Norway would probably be the best one.
She might have played for Norway. She did not look Norwegian at all.
No.
She had, like, darker skin than
right,
me.
Right.
And I'm you know, fairly tan these days.
Right.
These things happen in the summertime.
Yes.
Yes, and she was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that she was just kind of showing the event.
No, she was great.
And then she stepped up and was like, oh my God.
Yeah, she served to both of us, and I got a handful in. I know you got one or two serves in, but it was really hard to play against her because she's an Olympian. You have to be really good. But
I still think you could have beaten her.
But no, I don't know. I don't think so.
She was tough.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
She was big time.
But thank you for the fun time out on the court. And you even said, because I appeared with you on your show later on Saturday here on WGN, mm-hmm. you said you'll play me one more time, but if I beat you that time, you will never play me again.
Right, because I'm up 3-1, so if I lose and it's 3-2, I can still claim...
Overall, you're the victor.
Right, overall superiority. Yeah. No, I'll play you as much as you want to play, Bill, and I...
Play today? You want to play today?
Today I cannot
play.
Can't
do today.
But I...
Tomorrow? You want to play tomorrow?
Tomorrow's
bad.
Tomorrow. Let's think about
that. We'll figure something out.
It'd have to be later tomorrow, right. Bill. But sometimes I just see you randomly at the tennis court on, like, Monday night.
Yeah, I just show up.
Right.
I just show up.
Yeah, we... And
looking
then
for a game.
You're out there playing doubles, which is, you know, something that
is what
people do. Well, it's for the...
It's not real tennis. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I was just going to say it's for the older generation.
Come on.
Yeah.
I'm a lot older than you.
You're not a lot older.
I'm a lot
me.
Older. It was the battle of the generations. Like Bobby Riggs and Billie Jean King had the battle of the sexes. It was our battle of the generations, and old people won.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, congratulations, and...
Here's a poison dart. Well, thank you. I appreciate the poison dart.
Hey, wait, right. Real quick. I didn't catch who won, actually.
Oh, who won, Mark? Kevin wants to know.
Bill won, Kevin.
Wait, what?
It's Bill hard won? To say those it, words, Bill, isn't it?
Kevin, not only did he win, he won in straight sets, and
I don't even remember the scores.
I this is not
6-3, 6-4.
I'm actually like putting on a good face right now.
It eats at you.
Yes.
Have you slept since then? That was Saturday. Did you get any sleep at all since then?
It's not just the sleeping. It's like I can't eat either. I feel
and I noticed you're
sick.
Shaking a lot. Your hands are shaking.
Right.
I
mean, the only thing I've had today is a cup of coffee. No, knowing that I was going to see you and I just have to look into your eyes for 2 hours, it was too much for me to even digest food because I would instantly.
And when we're not air, I keep yelling out. I keep yelling that just to make you feel. At home.
You do that, by the way. Like the ball's 10 feet out. I know it's out. You're like, out. I'm like, I know, Bill. I know. It landed on the
and
other court.
Sometimes if you miss by a lot, I'll hold up my fingers like an inch apart and I'll go, you just missed. Yeah, and I know you hate that.
It was really
you
close.
Just missed by an inch.
Yeah.
All right. We need to take a break. It's Bill F. along with my friend, I swear, Mark Harmon. It's WGN.